I didn't get through the whole thing, but I get to get the gist.
So, yeah. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the City Council meeting for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, June the 20th, 2017. I currently have 7:01 p.m. I'd like to call our meeting to order. Tonight's pledge will be given by a great young man named Skip Ludlow, whose father we know. And so, Skip, if you want to come forward and lead us in the pledge, and then Council Members of Paula will lead us in the invocation. So, Skip.
Will the audience please rise? Please repeat the Pledge of Allegiance with me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The audience may be seated.
Thank you, Skip. Excellent job. Appreciate it. Mr. Zappala.
Our dear Heavenly Father, we're grateful to meet here tonight as a City Council. We're grateful for the freedom that we share in this country and for those who help to protect it. We ask that Thou wouldst bless us tonight with Thy Spirit, that we can be able to make good decisions among the number of issues that are facing us tonight. We ask that Thou would help us to be able to make decisions that will bless this community and help us to preserve the family atmosphere that we have here. We ask these favors in the name of Thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Thank you very much. All right, moving on. So tonight's agenda, we are going to move around a little bit. And so I need a motion to do this. I think Mr. Geddes is going to do this.
So I'd like to make a motion that we reshuffle the scheduled items and put items 8, 9, and 10 after item 15, then leave everything else the same.
Okay. So I have a motion to move items 8, 9, and 10 to after item number 15. And all those in favor?
I just want to... I'm going to be recusing myself on number 15 tonight.
Okay.
And so if that may or may not have any impact on this vote, but...
It shouldn't.
It shouldn't.
Okay, just letting you guys know, I'm going to recuse myself for that one.
Okay.
And I'll second Mike's.
Okay. All right. Motion's been seconded. And Daniel, you look like you want to say something.
Nope.
Okay. All right. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move on now to our public comments. I do have one person signed up, Michaeline O'Keefe. And Michaeline, if you'd like to come forward, state your name and your address, and then you have 3 minutes on whatever you'd like to talk about.
Great. Okay. I'm Michaeline O'Keefe. My address is 10401 North Tamarack Way, Cedar Hills. And so I would like to add to the Exoscape code for landscaping artificial turf. I would like to put it in my yard. I've been investigating this for years and I'm super, super excited about it. The reason I actually got the idea was because a friend of mine that was very close has artificial turf in their yard. They've had it for 15 years and it is gorgeous. There's a four-step process in putting it in that makes it so that it stays down and that it looks like real grass. The blades individually step up. And part of that four-step process is you have to put in a layer of road base, and then you have to lay it down, and you have to glue it, then you tape it, and then you put in silicone sand, and that anchors it down and makes the individual blades pop up. And it's just, it's wonderful. It's better than rocks because my kids can play on it. And it's just, it works great for animals. It's just amazing stuff. And I was told that since it isn't specifically in the code,
but they come out like it's weird edge.
So I'm here to ask if we can please put it in. And basically, I like to do it as soon as possible because I'm getting charged $50 a month for not having landscaping in, and I don't want to move forward too much yet because I've already put a lot of money into prepping it for this.
Who's charging you $50 a month? The city?
Mm-hmm.
Can we suspend? Can we suspend the $50 until?
Yeah, I just wrote that down to make a note of it. If this is something that the city council wants to look into, we'll suspend the $50 a month going forward until we can resolve the artificial turf issue.
Absolutely.
So I'll bring it back as as an agenda item soon.
Is this something the planning commission uses?
Yeah, I believe this would go through the planning commission.
So we don't allow this right now as it is?
Artificial turf, no.
We don't.
I like the idea.
Okay.
Me too, I would like to put it in my bag.
So we'll bring it through the normal process. How's that?
Wonderful. Thank you guys so much.
You're welcome.
And work with Chandler on your bill.
Okay, thank you.
All right, I don't have anyone else on the sign-up list unless they came in and missed me. Was there anyone else that wanted to speak during public comments? Nope. Okay, close public comments and move on to next item, which is a public hearing. And so this is the fiscal year budget, which is July 1, 2017 through June 30th of 2018. So has anyone come tonight to speak on the public hearing? No? Then we'll close that part of our meeting and move on to the consent agenda. So there are two meetings that have minutes we need to adopt. It's the May 2nd, 2017 and May 16th, 2017 work session and city council meetings. So if someone would like to make a motion on the consent agenda, I will take that now.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Okay, I have a motion to accept the consent agenda. Is there a second?
I heartily second that.
Okay, Mr. Zappala seconds it. Any further discussion?
I will just add that I think those are the most detailed minutes we've ever seen from council meetings. So.
Okay, thank you. So let's have a vote on that. All those in favor of the consent agenda as is, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Moving on to city reports and business, starting with city manager and going to the right side. So, Mr. Goodwin, go ahead.
Yeah, in our recreation department, we have the lacrosse starting tomorrow. We've got a lower number of participants this year. I believe it was 47. And then in golf and events, they're both doing very well. The events, if you go look up at their calendar in their office, you'll see that they're booked out on weekends for the foreseeable future. So we're really excited about that. And then golf is expected to exceed their revenue projections for the budget. As far as other city business is concerned, we've had a candidate withdraw from the upcoming city council election, and as a result, the city will not be having a primary for any city position. The Bay Hill Park equipment...
Who withdrew?
Stephen Thomas.
Steve Thomas.
He's a member of the Planning Commission. Okay. Bay Hill Park equipment has been ordered, and based on the feedback from the resident survey that we did in that area, as well as the recommendation of the Parks and Trails Committee that was sent out to the council, you guys got to see that. We're excited about that playground being developed up there. The golf course building is nearing completion, and I know I keep saying this, but we're hopefully completed in the next week and a half to 2 weeks before the end of the fiscal year. And then finally, the Cottonwood well is still down. We still do not have a diagnosis in the short term. We are able to provide services to the residents, so there's not a scarcity of water, but we are working with Delco Western to determine the issue there, and we will keep the council apprised when we do find out. Thank you.
Okay.
I got one question for Chandler. Chandler, where are we at with the field renovation on Heislitz Park?
We were going to wait till the baseball season was over, so we're probably looking at an early fall project there.
Okay. All right. Let's move on. So, Mrs. Reese.
I do not have an update this week.
Mr. Zappala.
We had a Parks and Trails Committee meeting. As Chandler mentioned, we spent a good amount of time talking about park equipment for Bay Hill Park. Charles did a great job working with the vendor to take two proposals that residents had voted on that they both liked and basically merge them into one better proposal and get a discount on hot bids. So Charles did a really amazing job with that. The park is also going to include benches and a barbecue. Charles working on fitting in a medium-sized pavilion with a basketball court. So it's looking like it's going to be a really nice park. We also talked about the budget for the next fiscal year. We currently have $85,25 budgeted for the next year. That's going to go toward maintaining the roundabout, integrating some fall plantings into the roundabout with some bulbs. Also talking about getting lights for the trees, some accent lights that can shine up and light up the roundabout during the nighttime. And then the budget will also go towards the pancake breakfast and the Santa visit. They're also working on Yards of the Month,
If you have a Yard of the Month or a neighbor who you think deserves a Yard of the Month award, you can feel free to contact one of us on that committee. And then regarding the pancake breakfast, I had two questions for the council. One was for Mike and asking, can he please bring his grill again this year? And so that's, I got a thumbs up. That's great. The other one was for Ben, and they're wondering, can we get 8 firefighters to help cook breakfast?
Of course.
And they're hoping they can get all 8 this year because they moved the date so it doesn't conflict with the Alpine Parade.
What's the day?
It is the third week in August.
19.
Yeah. And they'd like to start cooking at 7, so they'd love to have firefighters there by 7 a.m.
Okay.
That's my report from the best committee this town has.
Very good. Thank you. Mountain Land Association of Governments is not having a meeting in June or July, so we'll be coming back in August. I'll report back then. And we're going to be talking about Lone Peak Public Safety later on item number 15, so we'll talk about it then. So, Mr. Bailey.
I don't have anything to report.
Mr. Geddes.
Just we'll talk about Lone Peak.
Okay, very good. Thanks for your input, everyone. Now we're going to move on to item number 11, which is an action item on awarding a contract for the Community Recreation Center. So, Mr. Goodwin, you're going to present on this?
Based on our memo, you can read in our memo the background here that our June 8th meeting was a split vote, 2-1. As a result, we're bringing this issue back to the council where we've got more than 3. So one of the vendors, Falafel Tree, has withdrawn, citing that they didn't receive a vote in that, and they thanked the city for their consideration and have politely withdrawn their application. Staff has discussed, I've discussed with Greg and Becky, a number of issues that we hope to be brought up in light of the discussion on June 8th. We hope to get some more in-depth answers from the vendors. One, and these are listed in your agenda packet as well, so you don't feel like you need to write these down. Does the vendor intend to be open on Sunday? Will the vendor provide concessions on the course? Will the vendor provide breakfast services on weekends? What the vendor hours of operation would be during the golf season and possibly after the golf season, as the traffic, foot traffic in this building changes significantly based on the season? Will the vendor provide quick food options, and will the food options cater to golfers, wedding events, and residents? So basically, what does your catering menu look like? One other thing that we're looking at is we'd like to amend the concession agreement a little bit to give the city a little bit more teeth, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but we'd like to have the first and last month's rent paid up front as well as a security deposit. In the past, we've had vendors that have just up and left, and then the city's been on the hook to get that professionally cleaned. So those are some changes that we're looking at. And so if there's any questions that I can answer from the city council at this time, I'd be happy to. If not, we've asked the two vendors remaining, Mom Allows, and I've got your menus printed out from last time, and we asked them to bring some menus of what the actual menu item would look like. So I'll pass out Mom Allows and I saw Ernie walking in.
Ernie's here too.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to turn the time over to the mayor and council.
Thank you very much. All right, so we have two great vendors that are here to talk about what they can do for the city, Mom Allow and Ernie's. And so,
here you go.
I can have them come up and make a statement if you like, or if you'd like to direct some questions or have a conversation between yourselves, we can do that. So, is there a council member that has thoughts?
I think it would be good to have them come up and answer these questions that staff has.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea.
Okay.
Make
the call,
coming
up first.
I saw that it was wet.
Storm.
Wow.
And this is Mama Lau.
Hi. Well, I think you met my
my partner last time. I'm the person behind in the kitchen, behind the countertop. So I will try to do my best, since, you know, I'm mostly in production, so probably I'm not the best one to explain, but, you know, my husband is working, you know, with the truck now. First of all, I want to, you know, I think, you know, I'm also a Cedar Hills resident, so one thing that I think we have to take, you know, in consideration is that because I'm a chef, so I can fix anything you want, practically, you know. So, but I think the traditional managing model that of a store that, you know, it was, you know, proposed before us, it's exhausted. I don't believe that prior, you know, vendors were bad, you know, or they didn't have a good menu. I mean, six different, you know, people, different menus, different proposals, and all came from the food business fail. So that's telling us something. And probably all of us, you know, can make a good job in terms of food service. But for me, or for us, the key is not there. Nobody, I think that's my point. Nobody will survive here if we don't, you know, bring new ideas. Simple because, you know, labor cost to keep this running, you know, from Monday to Monday, you know, 24/7, but, you know, all the days, you know, mostly all the days in the year, it's expensive. If you compare, I don't have the numbers, you know. I asked previously if you have an idea, so how many people, how many golfers you have daily here. So to, you know, to make it, you know, profitable for a person who is here and to give a good service. So I think we have to open the scope. And our idea is to bring the community closer to the recreational center. And that, it doesn't mean that, you know, we don't care about golfers, which are probably, you know, the first, you know, the daily basis feed, you know, that we will have, you know, me or anyone else in the store, in the grill. But, you know, to bring new, not just only, you know, variety, dishes, options, you know, gluten-free, healthy food, gourmet, casual, ethnic. And I know that's hard because it's easier just only to have one, you know, one kind of meal, you know, whatever, pizza, sandwich, empanadas. And on the other hand, also, it's really hard to educate customers, you know, to a new proposal, because all of us have the tendency to go, you know, for what we know, even me. Even though that's challenging, you know, to have a variety of menu, like a restaurant, and at the same time educate people, you know, the customer with new proposals, I'm not scared of that. So, because I'm a chef, as I told you, so I can, you know, from European cuisine, I can do mostly everything, you know, except Jewish cuisine, which my respect, you know, I can do a few dishes, but, you know, But also because I faced that before, you know. So when I start with my business of empanadas, I think I'm the only one, you know, serving empanadas in a food truck. And I started when people didn't know how to pronounce the word empanadas. And nowadays I have people coming, you know, in 1 year, you know, I have people coming and say, you know, can you serve me chimichurri, you know, which is a long word for an English speaker, and, you know, with no sense for you. And and it's one of my, I'm a teacher too. So I like to, you know, to bring more sense to food, not just only, you know, my slogan is we don't feed people, we nourish them, you know, because I believe, you know, eating should be like a complete experience, you know, even if it's a small, silly snack. So obviously you have to have a good product in order to support a new concept. But at this point, I believe, you know, all of us are, you know, have a good, you know, product. But I believe that we have to bring a disruptive idea, like, you know, special Monday's night menu for family home evenings, or date nights for spouses, with some activity like dance classes or just only, you know, present a nice table, you know, to people to come and know they have something closer. And even sometimes we have ill people that they can just only, you know, call, you know, one of my ideas to have a delivery for the neighborhood, not just only for the golfers, you know, in the court, but for the neighborhood. So sometimes you have just moms stuck at home. They cannot leave because they have small kids. And you can bring something, you know, nutritious, different, homemade, made from scratch. And I believe that our community deserves that, and something that it's unique in the area. We don't have that, even if you go to Alpine, Highland, and something that make it worthy to the people to come here, because for some reason, I mean, I live, you know, on Bay Hill, and I never had, you know, it's like, you know, this area is not in my map, in my route. So I have to bring people here, you know, with one, you know, something that it's worthy. So, and another thing that, in my opinion, you have to keep in mind in the decision is that this continuous process is not just only exhausting for you. This took two sessions, right, already. So, but also, in my opinion, it hurts, you know, the venue itself, because people, you know, are used to hear, okay, you know, there's a new vendor, and they will be, well, I don't know, you know, by the time the people start to know that there is someone there, they left. So at some, I mean, I believe this is a great place. So I believe it's all, but, you know, we have to communicate it. And obviously have good staff, you know, because it's not just only something about marketing, you know, you cannot support, you know, something just with marketing. So,
Mrs. Montez?
Yeah.
I'd like to leave some time for council members to ask you questions.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't want to cut you off in the middle of a sentence. So is there, how much more time do you think that you need in order to make your introduction?
I'm fine. I'm finished.
Can I have the council ask you questions?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Council members, do you have any thoughts, questions?
Yeah, can I just go through the questions that staff provided?
Course,
yeah. So the first one is, are you planning on being open on Sundays?
Yes.
Okay. And you're planning on delivering to golfers while they're on the golf course?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And are you going to provide breakfast on the weekends?
Yes.
Excuse me. And what kind of hours do you think you might have during the golf season as opposed to after the golf season?
Probably because of the light. I mean, it depends also. It could, you know, weekends, you know, or Friday nights could be a different, you know, time hour. But for instance, during the week, from Monday to Thursday, you know, it depends on also, you know, the activities that the recreational center has, you know. But it will be wise, you know, not just only a few hours.
One of the questions is, will the vendor provide quick food options? I think, Chandler, by that you mean something you can get fast. You're not sitting around waiting for a long time for it to be made.
Yeah, of course.
And I think your empanadas, are they pre-baked, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the filling is, it's already cooked. So the only thing we have to put in the oven, one with those, the kind of oven you have here, it's 10 minutes. Okay. You know, if we, you start from scratch, I mean, from zero, from the freezer to the product ready. If not, you know, if you, when you have it in the warmer, like we have in the food truck, you know, it's all the time, you know. Yeah. It's a product that it doesn't suffer, you know, the process in the warmer.
Then,
but you know, there is a variety of things. You know, I don't want people to see me and see an empanada. I mean, I can't. I mean, this is the one product that I started with, because when you have to own a food truck, you have to, you know, reduce the scope. You know, you cannot offer a variety, because if not, people get confused.
Right.
But in a restaurant, I mean, the grill is like a restaurant. So you can, you know, have in the counter, you know, displays, things, you know, pastry, much more things that I offer in a food truck.
Right.
But that's just only a strategy, you know, just the empanadas in a food truck, but not what I can do.
And then you cater weddings already.
I love one right now.
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
And that's a different, is that empanadas only, or do you
have actually, I don't offer empanadas, just, you know, for starters.
Okay.
You know, because, you know, empanadas are handmade, so there is other options that are, you know, looks, you know, more gourmet, you know, fancy stuff. And, you know, it's cheaper for the person who contracts you, because, you know, empanadas are made one by one.
Right, right, right. Okay.
Any other questions, Daniel?
No.
Okay. Council members, any more questions?
On your catering, what kinds of things do you offer, and how many weddings are you catering on a monthly basis?
Okay, well, I have Italian, you know, I divide my menu. I'm sorry that I have it. Probably we can print it out, you know, from if you want. So, like, you know.
It's okay, just a general
idea. Okay,
yeah.
So I have, you know, three different big, you know, menus. One is Italian food, like with pasta, all those kind of stuff. If not, I have more like a natural Indian style with chicken curry, or, you know, rice pilaf, you know. It could be, you know, well, meat, vegetarian. I really adjust my options to what the people ask me to do.
And how many do you think you cater a month?
Well, I would say, I don't know, a month. But, you know, in average, I would say two a month, you know, in average. Because, you know, there are times that I have more and winter I have less. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions? Okay. Mrs. Montez, thank you very much. Ernie, if you'd like to come forward and talk to us again.
Sure. I'll drop this here first. These are just, that's the actual grill menu, and then that's our golf course catering. I only have one of these, and that's our actual wedding. I'll let you go. I'm sorry that they say senior.
It's okay.
I'll share with them.
Hey, my name is Ernie Zabriskie. I met most of you a couple weeks ago. Anyway, like I said before, we've been just about almost 19 years. Well, it is 19 years in July we've been in business. So. Same location on Center Street in Orem. We've pretty much kept the same menu. We've added breakfast to it. We've since been there, and we have a food truck, and then we also have a location in Sleepy Ridge Golf Course. We started there in February, and we've gone up, steadily increased by about 10,000 a month there. And according to Sleepy Ridge, I don't have any of their previous numbers, but they said that we've completely dominated anybody who's ever been there. They've never had people actually walk in other than golfers, and we bring a lot of customers in to the golf course. So, and we also deliver out of the golf course to the residents and a lot of the businesses that one of the ways that we kind of made a little model that works in the golf courses, because the golfers alone, that's kind of a it's great, and you have to feed the golfers because it's a golf course.
Right.
It's not generally enough to generate revenue to keep your doors open, especially not year-round. But we've figured out a lot of ways. We've approached a lot of businesses, mainly because we've been here for so many years, have so many years in business and so many contacts that we go to, like, the businesses outside. Like, we've already have worked with, Qualtrics, pretty much half the businesses here on the Hill. And they're asking us to come and cater lunches and deliver bigger lunches to the stores rather than just bring our food truck, because there's not many have one. And it covers pretty much from Salt Lake to Payson.
Hmm.
So that's one of the ways that we kind of supplement the revenue and how we've helped Sleepy Ridge too. Is, and on top of that, when we go out to all these businesses and we make contacts with them, we do a lot of gift cards with them, a lot of trade and things. So we bring a lot of those corporate guys. They said that their corporate passes have gone up a bit this year. I don't know if it's because of Ernie's specifically or because they have a grill that's open 7 days a week. And our hours, I don't know if they're on the menu there. We're open right now 7 to 6.
Okay.
And we've kept that since the day we opened the doors at Sleepy Ridge. And it's 7 days a week.
So do you have winter hours that are different than summer hours for the golf course?
Well, they asked us if we would, and I said that we wouldn't, and as of now, we don't. Because the numbers that we... Well, I have a baseline that we needed to make there to keep consistently open, and we walloped that in the first month. So
great.
We've already surpassed...
Were you open through the winter last... Were you open through the winter last year?
We started February,
17th. Oh, okay.
So we went through the snow, but I mean, we stayed and opened.
Good.
They also have employees in that building, much like this.
So Ernie, I'll ask a similar question that Mrs. Reese asked. Do you do? I'm thinking you do wedding catering and things like that, because I saw a menu for that. About how many of those do you do a month?
Over the years, probably also only maybe around two. But Reese, since we've been in Sleepy Ridge, it's only been a few months, 5 a month.
Wow.
But then we also do a lot
corporate
of
events.
Events. Yeah, we did Governor Herbert's birthday party also.
Excellent.
And we gave him both of our catering menus, and they just chose record steaks.
Okay. Council, you have any questions for Ernie?
And this is the menu. This is the menu
that's
that you have here.
Actual golf course menu.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm going to go through the same set of questions.
Okay.
So, I assume you're planning on being open on Sundays.
Yes.
You'll deliver to golfers on the course.
Yes.
You'll have breakfast services on weekends.
Yes.
And you already answered the question about hours. You're planning on just consistent hours, assuming you make it work.
One thing, really.
Go ahead.
I know there's been a lot of talk of kind of changing what is normally done at a golf course. And that's great because we already did. We don't have anything other than fries and onion rings that are on a golf menu. I mean, and then the reason why I said that is you ask if we serve breakfast. Our menu is based on breakfast. It is even in our store on Center Street. I think that's why we fit so perfectly into golfers. So anyway, sorry, go ahead.
And are these quick food options?
Yep.
Like you can grab them?
Even everything grilled there, and we start with uncooked steak that we trim and prep every single day. Nothing takes more than about 3.5 minutes.
Awesome.
Thrown on the grill from scratch.
Okay.
But we start each day with about 10 pre-made, just cold cut sandwiches, which usually go to waste because
they're amazing.
Once people know that they can get a real option, it's not the same.
And so are all these sandwiches hot sandwiches?
Everything but there's a Slam Dunk and an All-Star.
Mm-hmm.
There's a hot option on them, but we make those cold.
Okay.
Are you done?
Yep.
Okay. Mrs. Reese, any questions?
No.
Okay. On my right, Ben, Mike.
No, I'd just like to say, I mean, I was a supporter of Ernie's. And the only thing I'd like to say is I think in the interim here, I mean, I live in a Panati, made me really hungry tonight. No problem. But I'm a firm believer that for a golf course, this makes a little more sense, and at least you've proven it somewhere. So at that point, I'd like to make a motion that we negotiate with Ernie's Deli to be the concessionaire at the grill here.
Okay. So I have a motion made by Mr. Geddes to award the contract to Ernie's. Is there a second?
Can we have discussion before?
Discussion after the second.
I'll second it.
Okay. I have a motion and I have a second now. Now we can have more discussion.
So, Mrs. Montez, I've had your empanadas. They're the most delicious things I think I've ever tasted. The one issue I have is with the customer support. And so this last week, I had been gone for a couple weeks ago, or for last week's vote. And when I came back, I spoke with Jenny and whatnot, and it made sense, you know, what I was hearing. But this last week, the customers of this area have come out, and several of them have actually contacted me, and they all have contacted me for Ernie's. And I asked them, have you ever had, Mama Lau's and all that? And most of them haven't tried that yet. And so personally, and Ernie, I've never had one of your sandwiches, but they look amazing. They look amazing. But the issue that I've seen here with the last vendors, you know, five or six, I don't know what number we're on now, is that they haven't had that customer support. And this last week, I've had several individuals email me, call me, and then there's even out on the chat room, the public chat room, voice their opinions. And they all went with, I mean, not all, you know, a couple went with theirs. So personally, and this is hard because she's a neighbor, a good friend. Our sons hang out together. They go skiing together. So this is a very difficult thing decision that I have to make here. But I've got to go with what the citizens are telling me, because I represent the citizens. My personal belief is, if you haven't had an empanada, go to have our empanadas. Because if Ernie's doesn't work out, then by all means. But when I get the feedback from the citizens, I have to make that decision based on what the citizens do. So my personal, nothing against Ernie's because I've never had it, but personal experience is to go with Mrs. Montez. But the business side what I've been elected to do is represent the community, and they've expressed that they want Ernie's.
Thank you. Any other further discussion from council members?
Yeah, I have some as well. So in the last meeting, I did vote for Mama Lau's, and I have talked to Laura, and I've let her know. I love her vision for the community center. One of the struggles that I have dealt with since I've been on the council 2012 is there seems to be this rift amongst elected officials on what the purpose of this facility is. And from my perspective, it's supposed to be first and foremost a community center. And I base that off of the fact that we utilized recreation impact fees to build this facility, funds that were set aside for recreation. I went through some previous notes. I went through the motion that was made when the previous council had authorized the building of this building, and it very much focused on recreation and community services. And in the newsletter that went out to residents in November of 2010, when it announced that the community center, they call it a community center / recreation center, would be built, they talk about how it would be, they said that they saved over the last 6 years from impact fees specifically targeted and only legally available to be used for recreational purposes. It would include amenities such as exercise, cardio, media rooms, multipurpose rooms for community meetings, storytelling hours, adult book clubs, gardening and landscaping classes, birthday, family parties, would have the pro shop, would have the cart storage, some rooms for dance, aerobics, yoga. They talk about the grill and said that the facility will also include a grill for casual family dining. So I admit, I get a little frustrated when I come to these meetings and I hear the statement that we've got to focus on the golfers, because that's, to me, a small part of what this building is supposed to be. It's supposed to be about golfers and community. And the golfers are a big part of our community, and we do need to serve them and provide for them while they're here. But I have advocated, and I will continue to advocate, that this is supposed to first and foremost be a community center. And I would like to see more people here utilizing the building as such. And so for that purpose, I love Laura's vision, which is to have a place where there are different nights, whether it's a date night or a pizza night or whatever, to bring people in here. Because I agree with what Ernie said, which is that you can't rely just on golfers alone. We've had six vendors, and they've all failed because we can't just focus on one demographic. We've got to look outside. I worry that without more community events in this building, anyone's going to struggle, because there aren't people coming to this building unless they're golfers or unless they've got a reason to be here. And we're not providing a lot of community events here to be here. And if we do, like the pancake breakfast, we're already feeding everybody, so they don't need to go eat at the grill. So I love that vision. I share that vision. For those who don't know, the owners of Mama Lau's also run our food truck rally every week and organize our food truck rally. And I go to the food truck rally, and I see what's happening there, where the community's coming together and neighbors are talking and kids are playing, and that's similar to the vision that I've always had for this facility. At the same time, though, I agree with everything that Ben said, which is that, and I've talked to Laura about this, that I know that when I sit at this table, I'm a representative first and foremost. And while I love that vision and I share that vision, it feels like the feedback we're getting from the community is a different vision. And they, like Ben said, people have reached out and have said that they really would like to see Ernie's here. And my job is to represent residents and not to represent my own personal vision. So I love the food truck rally. I will continue to support that. I will continue to support whatever vendors here, but it does appear that from a resident perspective, Ernie's is what's getting the most support from our residents.
Okay. Thank you, Daniel. Are you wanting to say something?
Yes, thank you.
Uh-huh.
I've also had your empanadas. I love them. If I was choosing which one was going to come to my house, I'd want you there. In fact, maybe I should just offer you my kitchen to be your prep kitchen locally, and then I'd get empanadas every day. If I was choosing based only on what I want, man, I love ethnic food. I would go for empanadas, hands down. I love your vision as well. Like Jenny said, I really want this community center to become a community center. I don't think we're there yet. I hope the council, and I'm mainly preaching to the people here who are applying for an open seat this fall, I really hope our next council works harder than we have to make this a true community center. And then maybe someday we'll have a vision like that of families coming together and really enjoying their time here. So my heart goes out to you. I love your food. I wish I could say I'd support you 100% to be here. I can't pull enough of the council to support me on that. So I have to go with their news as well.
Okay. So any other questions?
Can I make one more comment?
Yes.
So I appreciate what Danny and Daniel said, and I do share your vision of this community center is. And I don't know, I don't want to debate Jenny at all here, but I do feel like I come up here quite often, and I really feel like this is becoming a community center, and I don't feel like there's a riff. So I don't know exactly what you're referring to, and I don't mean to confront you on that, but I'm just feeling like, hey, I see dance here, I see theater here, I see community events here, I see parties, picnic, or events that occur from like the end of the season events for school teams, and I agree with you, Jenny, that we need to move forward and keep this a community center, but I don't feel like there's a riff personally, and I don't know if that was directed at me or.
No. And when I say community, I think we've done a good job having some recreation here, which I would consider dance and those kinds of things part of our youth recreation program, and those things are going well. When I say community, I mean getting more families and adults up here for things to eat at the grill. Because when the kids are coming for dance, then they're just going, you know, they're going home. There's not enough for families to be here. And I think that in order for the girl to be successful, you've got to get more people here. That's one thing we've really struggled with, is that whether it's golfers or community, obviously we don't have enough support coming in the door to keep anybody going for very long. And so that's where, and when I say a rift, I mean, that's been my perception just talking with a variety of people, is that some of the feedback that I got recently was that, and actually Laura was in this meeting, was that that our council hasn't really funded recreation or community events here. And so, you know, staff is going with the direction they've been given based on the budget. And so I we talked about this at the retreat, I would like to see, even if it means a little bit of a reduction in our profit, an increase in getting the community here for community events.
I wholeheartedly support that. When we reduce the fees on Mondays and Tuesdays, I'm just thrilled with the success that we've had with that. And, you know, I don't mind the subsidy. I know it weighed on staff a little bit, but I think it's great. And I've seen some really cool events here on Mondays and Tuesdays. So, anyway, thanks.
Okay. Thank you. So I have a motion. It's been seconded. We need to vote on this.
Mayor,
so,
can I make a quick point?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Whoever wins the concession agreement, I think that the City Council, in conjunction with the Planning Commission, we need to have a real discussion on signage for the vendor, whomever it is. In the past, we've really limited their ability to market in terms of putting signs throughout the community. And our sign ordinance is not, it's very strict, but it's not strict in the sense that it limits speech. It's strict in what it allows, where it allows it, in public grounds especially. So I think that's a discussion that the Planning Commission and the City Council need to have in order to help accommodate whomever is at the grill.
Okay. I'm glad you brought that up, because I had that in my notes and I forgot to read my notes.
Yeah.
We absolutely need to do that, and that includes both a sign in front of the building so that when you approach the building, you even know that there's a restaurant there, that there's a vendor there. And we need to talk about where else in the city we might place signs, maybe on Canyon Road, to direct people in.
And I agree with that as well. And actually, I don't know if that's a question for David Shaw as well, to determine how that's going to impact. Like, can you say it's just for the grill, and would not open it up to every other private business that wants to have sign on public property? So I don't know if there's some legalities that we need to address there.
Yeah, there are, and so we have to take those offline.
We will figure it out. The other feedback I'd give that was also in my notes, thank you for the reminder, is I've walked into this building a lot and basically heard Golf Channel piped in through the speakers throughout the building when you're upstairs, and it's on the TV. And I'd really like a greater variety of stuff. If it's going to be a sports deli, I'd love to have football and baseball and basketball
on
the TV. Not just golf.
Variety, so I hope that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Very good. We've had discussion. We've had a motion. It's been seconded. And so we need to vote now. So I'm going to start from my right. Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Congratulations, Ernie. Thank you very much. Moving on to our next item, which is certifying the calculated 2017-2018 real and personal property tax levy from the county. Charles is going to present it. It looks like the rate is, I saw it here a minute ago.
It's 0.002024.
That's right. Thank you. I lost it on my sheet. Charles, go ahead. Present it. Go ahead.
So the new growth that the city experienced was 9,164 this year. So we're proposing to adopt the certified tax rate, which asks for the same amount on average of every entity. And that's all really I have to say.
Well, that was fast.
This is fast. This is a relatively easy item.
I'll talk a little more.
No, that's fine. That's it.
No, I want Charles to talk a little more. I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
This is more a question out of ignorance, because we've never done it as a council. If at some point we decided to not stick with the county's rate,
they've actually done that in the past.
Yeah. Not recently enough that I have experienced.
Before 2012.
True. I understand that.
And that's what I recommended last year.
If we decided to change the rate, and increase it, maybe because we decided we wanted community events and that's somehow the only reason we can find the money. What is the process to do that?
So truth in taxation, if you're increasing
it. Yeah, I'd like you to explain it.
So we would pass that now, and then I think you have the truth in taxation in August where you finalize that based on a hearing at that time.
And so, is it just basically a notice to public hearing?
Yeah,
do we have to send out flyers individually to every home or send them something in the mail?
I don't think you have to do that. It's just,
a special normal, public hearing.
Normal meeting. But, yeah.
So does this percentage give us, it does take an effect into the, it factors in the growth of the city as well, though, correct?
Yes. That's where the 9,000.
Because I always feel like that's it screws us a little bit.
That's where the 9,000 comes from. There is no inflation based in it. It's just based on whatever.
So it means that there was a slight increase in property value in order for the rate to go down.
No, a slight increase in residents, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
There's a slight increase in the property values here, and that's the rate goes down. In order to have about the same revenue come to the city every year. That's the whole purpose. Okay. Charles, anything else on the county certified rate? It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
I did find it is 0.002024, which is down from the 2016 rate of 0.002186. So, council, someone like to make a motion on this?
I move that we approve the certifying tax rate for fiscal year 2018 as provided by the county.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second, but do we need a resolution number?
Oh, it doesn't say on the. It doesn't say it's a resolution.
That does.
Is it the second page?
Down below.
Oh, there it is. Okay. To approve resolution number 6-20-2017A, a resolution setting the total property tax levy assessed upon real and personal property for general governmental purposes for the 2017-2018 tax year for the city of Cedar Hills, Utah.
Okay, so I have a motion. It was seconded by Mr. Zappala. Any further discussion?
I'm assuming that was an amendment to the motion. I will accept.
Yes.
I will second that.
Okay. Let's have a vote. Starting from my left, Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move on to item number.
I've got one question. On your next thing, how long is this going to take? No, and I do that respectively. Sorry.
It's only 16 slides. It's not.
Okay.
Which is pretty good.
Can I just make a quick
last
motion?
Last year was 44, so I cut it down a lot.
Can I just make a quick motion on our scheduled agenda? And I don't even know if I'm out of order or not, but I see that the fire department has showed up, and we don't know when they're going to be called out again. Very long. Can we move this to the next, number 15, to the next? To the next item real quick.
We can. I will tell you that items 13 and 14 are going to go relatively quick, I would think. But you certainly can make a motion.
Okay. Yeah, I would like to move that we move up 15 to the next discussion item.
I will second that.
Or schedule.
Okay. So we are. I have a motion to move item number 15 up to right now.
Yeah.
And it's been seconded. Any further discussion on that?
I'd rather not hear Charles right now. I'd rather hear the fire people. Sorry, Charles.
Okay. All right. So I have a motion that's been.
Charles, no, I'm sorry.
Motion that's been seconded. So we'll have a vote on this. So, Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. We're going to deal with item number 15 now, which is an action item on participation in the Lone Peak Public Safety District. Mr. Goodwin, go ahead and present.
There's a lot developing in regards to Lone Peak tonight. Glad to have the firemen here tonight. They're always welcome. The Lone Peak Public Safety Interlocal Agreement does require that the city give a two-year notice of public safety district as of July 1 of any year, provided that the notice of intent to withdraw has been given in writing to the other cities at least 24 months prior to the time of withdrawal. So we're looking at 2 years from now. This isn't an immediate consequence. This is starting July 1st, 2019. Now, the genesis of this, and I need to be clear on this because I don't want anyone to misconstrue the city's intentions here. As you know, our contract with American Fork Police Department expires in 2 years. Given that, we're negotiating with them and we're going to open up or explore other options such as Utah County, Lone Peak as well, and see. Pleasant Grove is another option that we were going to explore. I discussed it with their administrator, that this is a possibility. But we've got to explore all of our options. We have to look at getting our long-term public safety costs, getting a handle on them. This is one of the goals that the council emphasized in the January retreat this year. With there being a two-year expiration on the American Fork Police Department contract and a two-year buyout on the, or not a buyout, but a two-year notice given on the Lone Peak agreement, the city staff recommends that we put these two negotiations in tandem and see if there's some synergy that can be had by putting them under one jurisdiction, whether that be staying with Lone Peak or whether that be going with another entity. So during that January 27 council retreat, a council priority, like I said, was laid out for staff to begin to look at the public safety costs in the long term. And this is including both fire and police. So I know that we're only discussing, we're deciding on fire tonight, but this does involve police as well. And the Lone Peak Section 11 of the agreement says if a city withdraws from the district and the district is not dissolved, which is the case here, any distribution of assets to the withdrawing city shall only be as negotiated with the remaining cities. The cities agree to negotiate in good faith in determining fair and reasonable terms and conditions for the distribution of district assets to the withdrawing city. If the cities cannot agree on a negotiated distribution of assets to the withdrawing city, the cities hereto agree to mediate the matter. If the dispute is not resolved in mediation, then the cities may take the matter to court. I hope it doesn't get to that point. I had a discussion with Mayor Sheldon Wimmer from Alpine, who is the chair of the Lone Peak Public Safety Board, and I asked him to not begin, if this passes tonight, to not begin those discussions immediately. Give the city 6 to 8 months to negotiate some agreements with other cities and see what is in line. After about 8 months, 8 to 10 months, we should have a good idea of what our direction is, whether that's to stay with Lone Peak and withdraw our notification, or whether that's to start those negotiations, but not to begin them immediately. And then I think
we could ever go alone.
One thing that needs to be made clear is that, I spoke with Chief Freeman earlier, and this decision is solely a financial decision as far as getting our costs in order. This is not a referendum on the district itself. This is not a decision on the performance of the chiefs. I have had nothing but positive experience with Chief Freeman, the battalion chiefs. I think that they are exemplary in their performance of their duty, and I think that the level of service that we receive from Lone Peak is great given what we have in the budget. I think that they are an excellent organization. I am pleased with our association with Lone Peak, and so I want to be very clear that this has nothing to do with the chiefs or with the service that they provide to the community. So with that being said, what questions can I answer for you?
So let me make one statement before, which is just that staff has a recommendation that we give notice to Lone Peak of our intent to possibly remove ourselves in 2 years. And so I support that. And has nothing to, because I love the Chiefs. I'd rather spend time with these guys than you guys. No offense, but they're awesome. And so Chief Edwards, Chief Lyon, these are outstanding guys. And for me, I think that there's advantages and disadvantages to being in any type of service district and contracting with another city for police. And I love Lieutenant Ledlow and the guys and girls down there. And so I've seen the disadvantages over the last year, and it's more has to do with our relationship with other cities. And Cedar Hills needs to be treated as equals in a public safety district. And sometimes I don't think we are. And same thing with when you're contracting with another city for police, you need to be treated as an important customer, which is what we are. So this just gives the staff and council the opportunity to look at all options and come back and make a good decision. And that decision could include staying with Lone Peak. It could include moving police to Lone Peak. It could include moving everything to AF or PG, or lots of different options. But I agree with staff's recommendation on this. So, council, go ahead and ask questions if you'd like.
I've got one question for Chandler. So if we give notice, I've never really read or gotten into the bylaws of the fire district, but if we give notice Are we stuck? Meaning, do we have to get out?
No, we don't.
Okay, so the other two cities can't say you gave notice you're out, even if you want to stay.
There's nothing in the bylaws that I've seen that outline that. It just says give a 2-year notice, and then during that 2 years they negotiate the buyout.
Okay, so we're not painting ourselves in a corner here.
I don't think so. Not on anything I've read in the agreement.
Okay.
Council, from what I've read of the interlocal agreement as well, it's a notice of intent to be removed, not a notice of removal.
Okay.
And those are two distinctly different things.
Is there a time frame that we would have to actually state a notice of renewal? I mean,
and this is where I said to the chair that, you know, let's not begin those discussions immediately. Give us some time to look into this, because this isn't a decision that we're going to make in June of 2019. We're going to have those ducks in a row well before then. And that's why I say give us 8 months, 8 to 10 months to look into this. And then we'll come back to you and say, it's for sure we're leaving, or it's for sure we're staying. And then we can either begin those negotiations or...
So do you feel like we will have a pretty good feel for this by June of 2018?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do.
Okay.
For those that weren't here, I just want to reiterate that I do work for the fire department. I will be recusing myself from this vote.
I've got two questions for you, Chandler. One is, you mentioned negotiating a buyout. Typically with a buyout, what you're doing is you're having to pay for some liability that the district might have incurred, and you're trying to make sure that you're paying your fair share. True. Are there liabilities that the district has?
Yes.
What kinds of liabilities are those?
There is a...
There's leases.
I mean, there's lease equipment liabilities, but also there's a, in the kind of the unrestricted fund of the fire, it's negative. So the city would, part of the liability would most likely be a portion of that negative fund balance to the city.
Okay. And then the other question I have is, if we're negotiating with other cities, some of them may not use Utah Valley Dispatch. So are we also looking at dispatch services?
That would have to be part of the discussion.
And is there also a separate buyout there?
I don't believe there's a buyout. I haven't seen that agreement, so I don't know. But that could come into play, where of the four entities that I can think of that we would begin discussing this with, Pleasant Grove is the one that has their own dispatch. So.
Okay. The other thing I want to say, especially since we have members of our fire department here, I really like Lone Peak Fire. I really like Lone Peak Police as well, even though we don't get service from them. My preference has, since I sat on the board, has always been to have a district that would cover both fire and police, and to make that district as strong as it could be. The problem I've observed, similar to what the mayor has observed when I've sat on the board, is there's a fatal flaw with our district as it's currently conceived. It's not a separate taxing entity. It's bound to the cities and bound to the county. And that causes significant complications when it comes to setting budgets. Council members and mayors that are sitting on the board for the district are often shortchanging the budget of the district because they're trying to protect their city budgets. And things are out of whack. Our current fire costs that we pay to Lone Peak Fire are roughly equivalent to our total property tax revenue. So leaving the district makes that really, really complicated if we were going to somehow convert it into a taxing entity. But a taxing entity is the right way to go. You then have a property tax statement itemized on your property tax bill saying this is for Lone Peak Fire, and if costs go up, it's shown right in your property tax bill. You also would have a board directly voted on by members of that district, by all the residents in the district, rather than it just being an appointment from the cities to that board. I think it would be much more responsive to residents if we had a district that way. I would love it if we could somehow get there, but as we push that concept, we've not got the other cities to buy into that idea.
I've heard that same idea, and I like that idea as well, just given that it does allow the district to meet their budgetary needs on a year-over-year basis.
Yeah. So
it empowers the district.
If the outcome of this is we end up with a much stronger district in the end because we somehow are able to convince the other cities to go along with that vision, I would love that. I would love to have a strong district that was a separate taxing entity. I think that's really the right thing to do long term.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's part of the discussions.
Okay, any other questions or comments?
I don't have any other questions, but I would just echo what everyone has said. It's definitely not a concern about service. I think we've received fantastic service from all of our public safety, but it is always a concern as we're working within a tight budget and trying to figure out what makes sense for Cedar Hills.
Yeah, you'll see in our budget presentation, our revenues are fairly flat.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to be kind of very conscientious of that because there's not a lot of growth in the city. So we don't have new streams of revenue coming in. So we have to be very conscientious long term of our budgetary requirements.
Okay, thank you very much. So this is an action item. If someone would like to make a motion on this, I will take it.
Can I just have one more
yes.
statement? So with the severity of this or with how important this is, I noticed that the Alpine, some elected officials, and the fire chiefs are also here. I recognize that this was on our agenda, but I haven't really spoken with you about it or any of the other council members or the mayor about that. I would just, if possible, I'd like to hear maybe if they are interested in giving their two cents and whatnot. Like I say, this is it's not brand new to me, but it's relatively new, and I don't have any answers. So if we vote on something tonight, and then tomorrow I start getting questions, I don't have the answers.
I'll defer to Mayor Gigi on that.
Would it be possible to give them like 3 minutes or 5 minutes?
They won't.
If they're interested.
Would one of the chiefs like to come forward and take a couple of minutes? You don't have to. Just if you want to. Mayor Wimmer, if you want to take a minute. Okay. Why don't you go first, Mayor Wimmer?
Thank you. I'm Sheldon Wimmer, Mayor of Alpine, and pleased to see you folks again, most of you. Lone Peak was, the concept originally was an expansion in two areas. We had an agreement with Highland City between Alpine and Highland, and of course at that time Cedar Hills was not Cedar Hills and hadn't come into being a city. And the concept was to share the cost of those elements that we did have, a chief and some of the other support functions that were expensive for one city that were shared with two cities, and were able to accomplish more and provide a better safety organization. Along with that was the EMS program. And one day I came home and a friend of mine was laying broken his hip. He was there in November laying on the cement, and it took 30 minutes for the American Fork ambulance to show up. And we said, we've got to do something different. And so we had started to move as a city council in the direction of getting EMS support in there. And along with that, Highland says, well, you know, we're not all that up on fire, and there's a lot of different issues coming up. And when we first originally started this, we looked up and down the street there north of the 92, trying to find a fire station that would fit the needs of Alpine and Highland. Of course, that time Highland was still not as large economically speaking as with all the businesses and such. And then it just seemed to grow bigger, and you folks came on board. It has been a benefit for us. It's not been an easy thing. I agree with Daniel on the taxing entity concept. We originally thought about doing that because that does make a lot of sense in how you do it in funding your organization. You're absolutely correct. We scrimp and we do stretch the budget as far as we can, and we're awful tight on it. And but we're awful tight just like you folks. Alpine and Cedar Hills are just almost a carbon copy in populations, and but you've got businesses that bring in some mild sales tax revenues, which we don't have. So it stretches us a little bit to do the same thing with our property tax. Pretty much covers what our Lone Peak assessment is. So we're pretty close to that. The where the savings come are the overhead, and that's where we usually look at it, because it's going to cost you the same to have an engine in your firehouse, and it's going to cost you the same pretty much to keep a person online and trained and all the rest of it goes into it. It's the overhead share that's usually the thing that we can actually save money. I'd hate to see Cedar Hills leave. I think we're a stronger organization because we're a little bit larger that way. We serve pretty much 37,000 people, and I think we do pretty well at that. So it's been a great run for us. I do agree with Daniel on the taxing side of it, though. I've been a little bit easier to manage, but we make it work. Now, the board has been very careful in how we go through every dime, and we do. We stretch it as close as we can. Any questions for me, I'd be glad to answer any, but that's my...
Thank you, Mayor Wimmer. Chiefs, one of you guys want to come forward? Chief Raymond?
Thank you. I didn't prepare a talk, but that's okay. We've enjoyed serving Cedar Hills. We always do. We hope we continue to serve Cedar Hills. We feel, like I said, there's a lot of different issues you have to look at when you do this. One is you're covered by three stations, whereas a lot of the adjoining cities just have one station in addition to what your station would be. But like I said, we support you on you know what you have to do. I just, like I said, the thing that worries me a little bit is there was a lot of buzz going on in the fire station the last week over this. A lot of guys worried that they're going to lose their job, get laid off if Cedar Hills ended up leaving. And right now we're in a hiring problem because Lehigh's hiring 15 firefighters for their new station. UFA's got to hire. South Salt Lake says they're three short. They can't find any guys. We're three short. We hired one, but we tested. We couldn't find two other full-time decent guys out of school. I thought I'd never see the day when there's not enough people interested in firefighting positions. But when I tested, there was 400 that tested for three positions. When we put this out for three full-time and four part-time, we got 12 applicants. Okay, so we have some great employees, and if they think their job security is going to be threatened, they will leave and go to Lehigh this August. I know that, and I know Ben knows that. I've heard that, because they need to attract good firefighters from other departments. So I just hope it doesn't make a ripple effect within our own department. But I respect what you guys are doing. I understand it. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, you should get the best service for your dollar. One thing I've tried to do is be the most efficient we can for the most affordable we can. I mean, if you look at your station and you're paying roughly $650,000 minus your rent back, you won't find a station in the Wasatch Front, a full-time station, that can run for $600,000. Most of them run for $1.5 to $2 million in the Wasatch Front, as the study said. So anyway, just a lot of things to consider. And I hope that the attorney's right on that, that you can just say, we're just giving you our notice to leave, but we're really not really sure we're going to leave yet. So I don't know. I don't know how it's written. I haven't even looked into it. That's not my expertise, but anyway. So,
all right. Thank you, Chief. Okay. So, and again, just to be clear, Cedar Hills is not saying that they are going to leave the district. They're just saying we're going to explore our options, an exploratory committee, if you will. Okay. Let's have a motion if someone is ready.
I'll make that motion.
Go ahead.
Let's see. I move that we approve a decision to direct staff to notify Lone Peak Public Safety Board of the intent of Cedar Hills to withdraw from the Lone Peak Public Safety District effective July 1st, 2019.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
I will second.
Motion has been seconded. Any further discussion?
Yes. I'm just wondering if we want to amend it to make clear that this isn't a decision to withdraw. Do we need to do that, or is... I know the legal language is clear, but I don't want the board, the rest of the board and the other cities to freak out.
You certainly could. You could insert parenthetical, the notice of the intent to withdraw, parentheses.
Not A.
With future action relative to actual withdrawal, something like that.
Could I amend my motion to
go ahead.
Include what council just said?
Go ahead. Are you going to change the language?
Yes.
Go ahead.
But exactly what would I got to put my legal ears on again, so.
Notice the intent to withdraw, parentheses, with a future council action required to actually withdraw.
Okay.
Close parentheses.
Here's my new motion. I move to approve a decision to direct the staff to notify the Lone Peak Public Safety Board of the intent of the Cedar Hills to withdraw, in parentheses, not
with future
action. With future action to be taken
with council to actually withdraw.
To actually withdraw, in close parentheses. And then to from the Lone Peak Public Safety District effective July 1st, 2019.
Okay. I have a motion that's been amended. Mr. Zappala, Mrs. Reese, do you accept that?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Starting from my right, Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move back now to item number 30.
And Mayor, just for clarity of the record, if we can make sure that we note the recusal of Mr. Bailey.
Mr. Bailey certainly did notice that he was going to recuse himself, and he did.
Yes.
Thank you. All right. Elizabeth Paul is here. And she's left. Elizabeth Paul, who represents our Arts Committee, I know she's been here and she wanted to speak. So if she does come back, and while we're talking about the budget, I'm going to let her speak. She's not here right now, so Cheryl, I'm going to turn the time over to you.
While Cheryl's coming up, I'm just going to let the council know, because we modified the agenda and didn't make the applicants aware, one of the applicants notified me just now that he had to leave. Mr. Ellsworth had to go.
Okay. For the rest of the evening, he had to go?
It appears so.
Okay.
Okay. As was mentioned earlier, public safety is part of the priorities we're looking at this next year, along with our public works needs, not only staffing, but the infrastructure and the PI demands. And also, we're in the process of updating our park, trails, and recreation master plan and a sales tax stress analysis. So since March, these are where the changes have been made. We got the certified amount like last week, and so that changed by a few $1,000s. There was some changes because at the time when we were in March, the city manager was not yet hired, and then we hired. So those changes are reflected in this budget. And also, Lone Peak changed their budget lower than what we had estimated. And there was also some adjustments in public works based on new duties because of our engineer leaving. And also, there was a slight change to part-time community services staffing and also to our transfer to the capital projects.
Yeah.
So, the census, you can see Alpine and Cedar Hills are very close in size, and so is Linden.
They did that on the backs of the employees.
And you can see that Cedar Hills has been pretty flat, while some of these other cities are growing. So, new growth, this slide shows we were the lowest in new growth. Alpine had 24,000. Then the next lowest is Linden. Okay, what's the highlights for the general fund? Our main revenue that showed growth was passport service, which was added. Litigation still thought it would happen this spring, but it looks like it's still in process. So,
Charlotte, sorry to interrupt. I just had a thought. Maybe we should put our passport service in the grill, and that'll get lots of people.
Yeah, that's. how to respond to that. I'm sure Public Works would love to have the break room back. Right, Jeff? So, park maintenance contract will expire in December. We're not sure where that's going to land. If we keep Wilkinson, we know it's going to go up at least 20%. So the assistant city manager position was absorbed into the admin and finance. Those functions were absorbed by different departments. And engineering was absorbed by our engineering firm and Public Works. It's questions on what we've done with Cottonwood lots. So we've sold all the lots, I think, for $756,000 so far. And since we haven't had any significant litigation yet, we didn't draw down on that.
Quick question on the Cottonwood lots, because I've been asked about this by more than a few people. That money has gone into the capital projects fund, correct?
It's all unrestricted in the capital projects
fund.
That's
what I thought, okay.
Yes.
And then it's been moved to cover legal expenses.
It was, there was a budget adjustment in January to move it when we thought that there was going to be expenses in February, March, and then when it looked like it was delayed till June, they were moved back. So there was no money moved. The general fund transfer for the year is $400,000. Now, we could end up having excess that is less than that easily, depending on how litigation goes this month, and it also depends on how the other departments spend their budgets. We did have turnover, so there is going to be some expenditures that aren't up to 100% or 90-something, but we definitely had cost savings from the turnover and absorbing that position. And then we also had more revenues from our passports, and we continue to have some revenues from solar. That's a little bit more than what we would have in the average year without the solar boost.
So the $400,000 is everything over the 25% allowed?
That's the current estimate, but it's just a guesstimate, best guess. Sales tax has been up for the year. It was down last month by $5,000. The month before, we had our best month. So it's a little volatile, but we're averaging about $4,000 a month. Our program revenues are mixed. Green fees are slightly down from last year, though they are better than, like Chandler said, better than the three-year average, so they're doing better than the budget. Recreation has grown, and event centers had an excellent May. They're still a little down for the year, though. Building-related revenues, plan check fees are actually up. Building permits are a little bit down from last year, but not from new construction. It's mostly renovations like solar, so our impact fees are still pretty low.
Sorry, Charles, one thing I want to say, because we've got people here. So on the event center rentals being a little bit lower, I just want to acknowledge that part of that, well, a big chunk of that comes from the fact that as a council, we decided to change it up a little bit and allow for Mondays and Tuesdays to be available to residents at a significantly reduced rate. Yeah. And we knew that would impact the budget slightly, but we wanted to give residents more opportunity to get here at an affordable cost.
Thanks for that clarification. Yeah, so that was anticipated. But we're always trying to do our best with whatever.
we approved that it was going to go down, and we knew that.
Just quick highlights from the golf debt service. We've reduced the operating budgeted subsidy by $5,000. Plan is to purchase the equipment with fund balance and to keep the golf debt levy flat. On the capital projects, that's where there's... We have some projects.
Hey, can I just point out on that, just because I think it's important there,
yeah,
that on the golf I mean, we reduced the subsidy by $5,000. But I just want to point out that when this clubhouse was built for recreation, I mean, part of that was for the golf course and to enhance the revenue for the entire golf course. I want the city to, at least on record, to understand, again, I bring this up a lot, but the revenues for this recreation community center do not affect the golf course numbers, even though they really, it was built with that in mind. So it effectively has brought the debt down, or but the operational subsidy down significantly.
Yeah, if you include that, then the operational subsidy is pretty close to zero. Little purchases that we're paying for in the debt.
And I just want to reiterate, pretty close to zero. So when you hear out there in the community the golf course costs us, that we're subsidizing it, other than from your taxes, which you are, because we voted for that, we are not subsidizing it as a city, really, if you include the whole package.
Question on that really quick. When there are events in the event center that are golf course related, like a tournament,
Those go to green fees.
That revenue goes into the green fees.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
So,
but in the past, before the building was built, when you had the sunset room, the sunset rentals that were not golf tournaments were included in the golf fund, just if you're trying to compare.
Yeah, yeah. No, I understand that. But I just wanted to be sure that we are properly accounting for that, and that revenue does go to the golf site.
Yes.
Right.
We have money in impact fees, and we also are trying to develop our commercial land. Those aren't necessarily exact numbers of what we'd spend or what we'd sell, but they're a little more realistic than what we've had. There's also some pending projects. The Bay Hill Park, it's mostly done, but there's a retainage part to the construction where they're maintaining it for a year. And the equipment, it will most likely arrive the first week of July, so that is also in there. The pavilions, trying to get bids on that, and also the bathrooms, we're still trying to get bids on that. Heritage Park was just delayed with the other projects going on. And the golf maintenance building's mostly done, but there may be a retainage part that we need to pay in the next year if there's. So those are the highlights. Just a highlight of what Care Tax supported in the past, and that we are putting that on the ballot for this upcoming year, which would, you can amazingly get some pretty cool stuff with $40,000, what I've learned reviewing, that would really enhance our parks. So as far as water and sewer fund, the highlights are that we followed the Bowen Collins study because we're trying to do pay as we go, and we don't have the impact fees to do that on projects, and so we have recommended increases in different categories. We lowered the sewer a little bit because of the recent CCAP study, and we also eliminated transfers to other funds for water and sewer reimbursements and for the excise debt service. We have pending capital projects planned that we're still in the process of studying, like Canyon Road Sewer. We have to have engineering plans to get an estimate, and they're still testing out different trucks, and their Deerfield Drain, I'm not aware that we have any land purchased from Deerfield yet, but those are in there in case we do. Motor pooled, quick highlights, three vehicles, a diesel flatbed, which was a change from a one-ton truck in the past to help with the snow and ice removal, and better resale value. And so those are the where most of the increases came from, was getting a diesel instead of one ton. But we should get that money back later. The summary is we absorbed a position. We're proposing to adopt the certified tax rate, which you already did. We have potential higher costs in legal and park maintenance. And then we're trying to fund our capital maintenance and improvements with what we save from the general fund. And Bowen Collins study, and I think I've covered it all. So, you guys have any questions? You've heard it mostly before.
Any questions on this great presentation?
I thank you, Charles, for your hard work. Thanks. In addition to this, you're also a pretty good landscape guy. So,
yeah.
I do.
Whatever's needed.
I do have one question. Somewhere in here, I saw that last year we transferred $78,000 to an excise debt service fund. Can you remind me what that was?
Yeah, so our public works building was paid for with excise tax bonds, and 50% is paid from the general fund, 50% from the water and sewer fund. We set up it separately, and we were going to combine it with the general fund going forward. But then when there came out new code about enterprise fund transfers, I recommended to move it to the water and sewer fund and have the general fund just transfer to the...
Just wanted to notice on 1069915.
Okay.
It's just a typo.
Thanks.
I just wanted to prove I read it.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else have any questions on the budget that's been presented? There is a spreadsheet that shows you the difference of the... Want to stand up? I know you like to stand up sometimes. Okay. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we're ready to start again. Colleen, just give me the thumbs up. Okay, we are recording. So we are back now to item number 14, which is an action item. It's a resolution adding, amending, or deleting certain fees to the fees, bonds, and fines schedule. This is pursuant to the Bowen Collins study. So Mr. Goodwin, go ahead.
This changed. These numbers changed right before council. We noticed an error on the sheet, so hopefully you're looking at the right one. The change.
It's the one that we got today?
Yeah. Today at like 4 o'clock, yeah, something about that. The change was in the water PI not connected. The original document showed all those numbers decreasing to $1.80 to be similar to water PI not available. That is not correct. The Bowen and Collins study actually shows slight increases in those. So we wanted to rectify that in the council packet before the meeting happened. So that happened. So I hope you're looking at the right document. So this change in the fee schedule, we try to do this once a year, but it seems like we do it about 4 times a year. But these numbers reflect the budgeted numbers that were just approved in the budget. So all the water, sewer, storm drain revenues for utility fees reflect these new rates. So are there questions on these new utility rates? This is directly from the Bowen and Collins study that was adopted in 2012 and updated in 2015.
This is what cities do. I mean, we provide services, and so it's what it costs is what it costs. And I appreciate the studies.
To note to that, this allows us to do the projects that we need to do.
Yeah.
In the long term, it allows us to keep up on our infrastructure improvements, which is important.
Excellent. Okay. Someone like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
If I can find it. That we adopt resolution number 6-20-2017C. A resolution adding, amending, or deleting certain fees to the official fees, bonds, and fees schedule of the City of Cedar Hills, Utah.
Okay. I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Mr. Zappala has seconded it. Any further discussion? Okay, let's have a vote. Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Going back up to item number 8 now, which is a review of City Council applications. So I know a couple of people have left, but we still do have some people here. And so that doesn't mean that the people that left should not be considered. Everyone should be considered. And I'm going to walk you through how we're going to do this. And so there are certain parts of it that are dictated by state code. And so I'll explain that. So what we're going to do is allow each of you to have up to 2 minutes for an introduction, opening statement, if you will. And then council members are going to ask, for the most part, group questions. Each of you will respond, and we're going to go alphabetically. So Denise Anderson will be first, Trent Augustus is second, David Driggs will be next. If Ben Ellsworth were here, he would be next. And Maurice Navarro, you will go last. However, after we narrow it down to two, and that's the part of the state code that we have to do, is unless someone gets 100% of the vote, it's narrowed down to two people. And so those two people will remain, and the council will, at that point, ask specific questions to you individually. And then we'll vote again. In both cases, it'll be an open vote. It's not a secret vote, so you'll know exactly how the council members are going to vote. And at the end of it, then we will have one person who has been selected, and you will have a one-minute closing statement before we vote the second time around. So you'll have up to a two-minute opening statement, group questions from the council. We'll have the first vote to narrow it down to two people. At that point, those two people will take individual questions from the council. They will make a closing one-minute statement, and then we'll vote for the final time. After that, then I'm going to make a council assignment to whoever that person happens to be. So, let us begin. Denise, if you wouldn't mind coming forward, and you have up to 2 minutes.
Okay, thank you. I'm not sure this is working.
It is.
Okay. I'm Denise Anderson. I think I've had a chance to talk to all of you on the council, and I appreciate you taking the time to do that with me. I've lived in Cedar Hills for 25 years, and we chose Cedar Hills specifically because of the peaceful environment and what we thought the city would become. We knew that it was a growing place, and we wanted to be a part of that. We lived from 92 to 2005 over here in the neighborhood by the fire station, and then when we outgrew our house, we decided we wanted to move and build another house, but my only option was I wasn't leaving Cedar Hills, so we had to find somewhere in Cedar Hills, so we've been here in our other house since 2005. I have been recently the precinct chair in my voting district, and I've been able to watch this these politics on the county and state level, and I decided I don't want any part of it. But what I do want to be a part of is our city council. I've been watching from the sidelines for so many years, and I've been involved in different ways. I was on the beautification committee, and I've done a few different things. But I want to get more involved with the city and help usher some progress into the city. I love where the city's going. I like the direction it's going. I think good things are happening in Cedar Hills, and I just want to be a part of helping those good things continue. So that might be my 2 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Denise.
Thank you.
Trent?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. It's interesting to be on this side of the table. I'm sure many of you will take retribution against me for this later. Mr. Zappala, but I won't name names. So, we'll be brief. I decided that I would like to continue my involvement with Cedar Hills. When I left, I said that I would never be far away and that I was probably not done with what I would like to do. And so when this came about, I kind of looked at it and said, you know what, it's a 6-month term. I have the experience, I've got the background, there would be very little getting me up to speed, very little ramp up time to gears or whatever needs to happen at that point. So really, I guess that's why I'm interested in this is just being able to help out on a short-term basis, being able to help out for the 6 months and not have to invest all the training and time and effort that would go into some of the others. Not saying that they're not capable, just the training I think would be a little bit less. So I've lived in Cedar Hills 11 years. I've worked with all of you. You guys pretty much know my background and where I come from and all that. So I will leave that aside. And that's what I have to say.
Thank you. David Driggs.
Hello, Council. Appreciate the time. I've lived in Cedar Hills for, I think it's 16 years. I haven't done the exact math, but I believe it's around 16 years. Based on my children's age, I kind of measure that by what year they were born in the AM hospital. Work my way backwards from that. A little bit about me. I've been in healthcare consulting for and healthcare more effective or smarter, if you will. That's my occupation. I have a hobby turned business as well, so I'm a small business owner. My father runs that business for me. It's an internet publishing company, so I have that as well. Married, father of four. My oldest actually lived in Denise's house, rented there. So my son was a tenant of Denise's for a while. So as far as my public service at Cedar Hills began back in 2010 when I served on the Blue Ribbon Recreation Committee that put together some recommendations for this building in particular. I then actually, in August of 2012, I did the same process. I came and put my name in the hat to be appointed to council. We all met up at the fire station. If you recall, Councilman Zapala was selected that night and he's done a good job. So I'm glad for that. So after that, I was asked to serve on the Planning Commission, which I did. In 2012, I began serving on the Planning Commission. I've been there for 5 years. I currently chair the Planning Commission the past year, approximately. I've also served on the Gulf Finance Committee in 2015. If you recall, some of you were on that as well. We had, 11-month, pretty tenacious, time-consuming process of evaluating the golf course. So I was involved in that process as well, and I served on the General Plan Committee as well for a period of time. As far as objectives, I basically want to continue the path and the roadmap, if you will, that you have established. I think that the council has done a great job in improving things financially, fiscally for the city. Transparency is improved. I want to continue doing that. And on Planning Commission, I've been, 2 years of meetings with that commercial development, right? And that's probably going to be a topic, I would imagine, on council here at some point. So I think my knowledge of the whole 2-year process of that commercial zone would be useful in council. Another objective I have is
Mr. Driggs, I don't want to cut you off in the middle of a sentence, but I'll let you go well beyond 2 minutes.
Well beyond already?
Yes.
Okay. One last sentence.
Okay.
So my signature program is going to be helping small businesses grow. Home businesses, a lot of materials. So that's what I want to do.
Thank you very much. Okay. Council, someone like to start off with a question?
Maurice. No, we have one more. We missed.
Oh, Maurice, I am so sorry. Please.
That's why I sat in the front row. So
I lost my mind for a minute. Time is yours.
All right. Thank you. Council and Mayor, I want to thank all of you for the opportunity you've given me to just stand in front of you and give me the opportunity to serve with all of you, if possible. So I've lived in Cedar Hills for about 2.5 years, so compared to everyone else, I'm a little bit of a Cedar Hills baby. But that doesn't mean I don't love the community. In fact, we fell in love with it, my family and I, well before we moved in out here. We actually were in Seattle, and we actually already had fallen in love with the area. We actually had some family members who lived here, and we thought, well, if we ever move to Utah, which will never happen, we would probably move to Cedar Hills. And we did move to Utah, and we looked for every opportunity to move to this area. And it took us a couple of years, but we finally made it, and here we are. And so some of the things that we loved about it was, and we continue to love about it, is the sense of the community, the way people, there's a sense of a sort of family. I have 3 children, and that was also very important for me to have an area where I felt comfortable having my kids run out and play. I grew up in Miami, Florida, and that was not the case where I grew up. You know, so I've always been very open-minded and open to consider other people's ideas. If I don't understand what you're talking about, believe me, I will bug you with questions until I do. I work in residential financing, but before that, and I still do it concurrently, I've been doing commercial financing for about the last 5 years, and that has given me a lot of exposure to some of the things that you deal with as far as dealing with zoning, and in fact, we've had to work with golf course developments in the past, so I know that's a topic, I will say that, in this residential area. But because of the work that I have a pretty flexible schedule, and I just want to be able to basically serve and help the community that's welcomed me with such open arms. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Council, now is time, is your time to ask questions of the group. So, someone is ready, fire away.
Well, I'll start. from a city perspective, what do you feel is the proper role of government?
Proper role of government is to protect its citizens and develop the neighborhoods so that we have safe places to live and utilities that work. And basically, that's what government's about, just keeping the city running and safe place for the city citizens to live.
Thanks. We're going to continue alphabetically. So, Trent?
Pretty much on the most basic level, it's to provide for the needs and services for the municipality. So things like water, sewer, public utilities, infrastructure. And then going beyond that, I also see a component of that goes into recreation and community involvement and all those other things that maybe a private entity couldn't provide, but that are kind of a well-being and kind of a well-rounded community so that everybody can come together and have a community spirit, very much like our family festival. I think that's a great thing for a city to do. And if you look around at most cities, Orem does it, Pleasant Grove does it, American Fork does it. So I think all of those things kind of rolled together are the proper role of government.
David.
My answer is not going to differ much from Trent's and Denise's. The proper role of government is essentially to provide for basic services, utilities, safety protection, roadways that are free and you can, passable, if you will, in the wintertime even, for example. And beyond that, the quality of life. I think the quality of life is where the recreation comes in. I think there's an element there where the city can have a role in enhancing one's quality of life. That's the proper role of government.
Thank you. Maurice.
Thank you for remembering me this time. So obviously the role of government varies from level to level, but at the city I think it's where it's most fun and necessary because that is where the closest relationship with the people, with the residents. And so it is to protect the rights and needs of the residents of that area. No one would know that better than the city government if they are paying attention to the people who they represent. And so just to continue with what everyone else has been saying, though, that includes utilities and safety and looking at all that, but it should be a reflection of what the people need because they should know best at that level.
Thank you.
The people upstairs approve of that.
More questions? Anyone have any?
I have a really simple question. How many hours do you think you can devote per week to being a council member?
So I work from home. I run the financial end of my husband's stock film company that he has, and I also do our property managing for the rental properties that we own. So my time is very flexible. I work whenever I want to at home, and so I can devote as many hours as needed for a city council position. I'm very flexible. My fourth child just graduated from high school. I have one left at home. It's a really weird place to be, but that's where I am. That's one of the reasons I'm here today and not 10 years ago. It's because I feel like this is the time in my life where I can devote the time that's needed to something like this. So that's why I'm here today.
Thanks, Denise. Trent?
Yeah, so being on council in the past, I've devoted anywhere from 2 or 3 hours a week up to probably 30 hours a week. there were not a lot of fun weeks when we were doing 30 hours a week, but if that's what the case was, that's what it required. So, as you know, I'm more than happy to dedicate the time needed.
Thank you. David Driggs?
Again, my answers aren't going to differ much from Trent's and Denise's. I also work out of my home. I have flexibility in that regard. I establish my own schedule with my work, so I have freedom in that regard. I guess my generic answer is whatever it takes, right, in order to understand the topics at hand for upcoming agendas and things of that nature. I imagined using Trent's experience at a minimum, probably 2 to 3 hours a week, and more if necessary.
Okay. Maurice?
When I met with Colleen, I remember one of the papers actually indicated 20 to 30 hours, and I asked her how realistic that was and said, hey, sometimes it's necessary. And I, you know, at that point, I had already decided, hey, if I can do that, I mean, I'm more than willing to. The work that I have is very flexible, allows me the hours to do that, so whatever is needed.
Thank you. Any more questions?
Ben.
You know, the only question that I would have is tonight was one of the most, not the most, but tonight was a difficult, we had to make, I mean, choosing a food company shouldn't be that difficult, but there was some personal relationships. Living in a small city, we have very personal relationships. In fact, I've met most people in this room, I've met everybody in this room, but I know some better than others, but there's times that you may need to make your next door neighbor. I mean, you guys saw that when Mrs. Montez was here. I mean, she takes my kids skiing, and for me to have to turn around and say, I'm sorry, I got to go with some guy I don't even know. But that's based on the what the community wanted. Can you give me a brief give us a brief time maybe when you had to make a decision that just wrenched your guts and you know, it doesn't need to be personal, but and are you going to be able to do that? I mean, because I'll tell you, it's not fun.
And that's a hard question, having never served on a city council. But I mean, obviously in business and in other situations, we've had to make decisions. I've had to evict people from homes that I own for different reasons. It is not easy.
Right.
It's heart-wrenching. But you have to go and do the hard thing if it's the right thing to do. And yeah, I may not be popular. Those people don't like me. They hate my guts now. But it was something that was necessary. It had to happen. And it was really hard for me to do. I don't like people to hate me. It's not easy. But sometimes you do have to go in and say, okay, well, this is the right thing to do, or based on the information I have, this is what needs to happen, or based on the general consensus of the citizenry, this is what has to happen. So yeah, I think I could do that. It's not easy. It doesn't feel good. I'm sure you feel sick to your stomach telling your neighbor she can't have her business here in the building, but sometimes you have to do that, and it's not easy. But that's an example.
Thank you, Denise. Trent.
I mean, ultimately, and sitting on that side of the table, we're the ones that signed up for it. So if we can't make the decisions, then we shouldn't be on that side of the table. And being on that side of the table, I've had to make those hard decisions. Within the first 6 months of being on council, there were some really tough decisions that we had to make, and it required 10, 20, 30 hours for quite a few weeks in order to make those decisions. One of the hardest decisions I ever made was having to let a buddy of mine go from a position that he really liked, that I worked with him 8 hours a day, 12 hours a day for months and months. And he wasn't doing his job the way that he should have been, and I had to let him go for it. So yeah, I mean, there are hard decisions that have to be made, but that's why we're here.
Thank you. David?
So a real-world example here in Cedar Hills, the Chandler knows well, and some of you probably know, Fred Levine, my neighbor, wants to split his property. He needs the money. He wants to have a little bit of money for a little bit of retirement. He wants to visit Germany. I see him every Sunday. He's my neighbor, and he approaches me constantly about how to find a way to make this work. So he's been before Planning Commission a few times, and you know, I voted no. I'm sorry, Fred, you can't do this.
So that's just a real world example of what time I had to vote, you know, against some body that, you know, it's not my job to interpret the code or the law, the rules in a manner that I personally want. I would love to have seen Fred accomplish that. And he may still do so if he meets the code, but that was just an example.
Thank you.
Thank you. Maurice?
Just a couple of examples. So in financing, I've had to, you know, I work with, my job is to find the loans, to find people who are seeking financing. Sometimes, with commercial, they can range from $500,000 to $25 million deals. And, you know, so each one entailed a different, but I had to many times early on, I was the first step in underwriting, and I would have to tell the individual, this is why this is not going to work, or this is what you should do to make this work, or what would be appealing to the lenders. And, you know, oftentimes, I just had somebody actually recently, and this was with the residential financing, and I told her why they wouldn't qualify, but I gave her a plan as to what to do to qualify in, let's say, in about 10 months or a year, and she still was mad at me. She still yelled at me. She said, well, you're wasting my time. She even put a bad review on the company, and the company actually reviewed the conversation and saw, wow, you, Maurice, you actually did not do anything she said that you did. And I've been serving in my HOA's board now for 2 years as president for about a year now, and we just had our annual meeting, and that was fun because we gave an opportunity to the individuals to speak up, and there were a few things that were brought up and complaints and so forth, but my goal is to watch out for the rest of the community, the whole community, including them. And you know, we listened and we talked about it, but I definitely heard when they were not happy about it, not when I was able to resolve the other things that we got taken care of. But something that happens, it's and I'm ready, and I understand what many of you have talked to a few of you before and what you've had to go through, but this is about the community, and I want to serve it, and you know, you're not always going to get the feedback that you would hope, but as long as you can sleep comfortably at night knowing that you did the best for everybody as a collective group, then I think you've done your job.
Thank you. That's nice. Mr. Geddes, do you have any questions?
Yeah, just one quick question. Most everyone knows my passion. It's the golf course with our city. I don't want to make this an election year issue at all, and I think we're kind of well past that. But I'd just like to hear a couple words of how you view the golf course.
So I lived here when the golf course was built and when that was originally put forth to the city, and I was here during the controversy. Oh my goodness, I love the golf course. I don't golf, but I understand the benefit that the golf course is to the city. There are some things that you do in a city that perhaps might not bring in all the money, but it adds value to the city and to the houses around the golf course and to the people that can see the golf course and to the functions that are held at the golf course. I think it's an asset to the city. I think it's something that beautifies the city. My niece actually lives right on the golf course and she loves living there. Since its inception, I thought it was a good idea, and I supported Mayor Sears when he did it, and I continue to support the idea of the golf course.
Thank you. Trent?
Yeah, as you know, I love the golf course. I've supported it from day one. I always will. There's a cost to it, but I'm happy to pay that cost. If the residents decided at some point down the road that, you know what, 90% of the residents want to get rid of it, I would support that too. I have 3 9-hole punch cards sitting on my desk right now that I wish I could use more of, but unfortunately I don't get to play as much as I would like to, but I love playing our course. I think it's great. Our neighbors go take pictures of the mountains, the golf course, the scenery, the wildlife that associate with that, and I love seeing that, and I think that's kind of a quality of living thing for all of us that live around it. So,
thank you. David?
I used to be an avid golfer. I haven't golfed for many years, but I used to golf like 2 times a week, actually. Never got that good at it, just because kind of why I gave it up. Never got better at golf. So when I basically feel, and especially after serving on the golf finance committee, that, and especially after when we were compiling the 242 pages of data, opinion, and input, and analysis, that even if I wanted to get rid of the golf course, it'd be a pretty bad decision to do. There's a lot of legal entanglements. There's a lot of easements. There'd be lawsuits. I mean, so in my mind, it's just even a silly notion at this point to even consider that concept. I feel that we own the course, we've been paying for it, we need to continue paying for it, and we need to do all that we can to make it a success, to make it more of a success, to increase its revenues, to increase its attraction, whatever it is. And I think that the golf course, I haven't golfed for many a year, but as near as I can tell, it's a popular course. It's like a very nice course. So I support it, and that's how I view the golf course.
Thank you. Maurice?
So I think, like most golfers, I would say that I don't play as often as I'd like, but I do enjoy the sport. In my experience with the commercial financing and looking at golf golfing developments, the golf course, I think most golf courses, I think every single one that I saw had struggles. That's something that's it's apparent in the industry right now, but that was never the only point. It was about what it meant to the rest of the neighborhood, how it was an asset to the rest of the development. And so from what I saw and looking at those reports and the financials over the years, they never were successful at the beginning, and not all of them ended up being successful, but those that they were they were active discussions, actively trying to work at it, would prove to be successful. So we always looked for great management, and that seemed to be the turning point. So when there was a focus on what to do, how we can improve it, make this work, they turned out to be successful. So that's one thing that with this particular golf course, I think it's gorgeous. I've been played on it before. And, I think it can be an asset. I know it's been back and forth here and there, and the community is a little divided as to how it is. I don't think the topic right now is whether or not it should go or not, and I don't think that should be, but there should be some, there should definitely be a lot of discussion, a lot of thought put into it, because I think it can be successful. And one thing that Cedar Hills has that centers around it. I mean, we look at the other cities and they have their, and I know you guys are discussing this as well with pools and other types of facilities for the community. The golf course is that right now for Cedar Hills. Cedar Hills really doesn't have much else to, that the people can have that sense of community. And so it's nice that I'm hearing, because this is not what I've heard the residents say about it being a sense for community. And it's nice to hear the council actually mention that a few times. But I think that for that to eventually happen, that it can be, but it needs to be, it's going to be an ongoing discussion. I think I've made my case there.
Thank you, Maurice. Does anyone else have a question that they'd like to ask?
I do, if that's okay.
Yes.
So, as many of you are probably aware, there were some concerns with a proposal that was made for our commercial zone with some residential units there, and that brought out a lot of residents with very strong opinions on that. So, my question is, what is your view on how our commercial area could be best utilized, and would you agree with the decision that was made by the council on that particular project?
Our commercial zone, in my opinion, is too small because we need that sales tax base. And anyway, I'm not thrilled with the idea of a multi-unit 55 and up residence going in that section. I would love to see some small commercial business go in there instead. That's just my opinion. I feel like the high density units would be a strain on our public services, the fire department, police department, all those different services, and I think we need the sales tax revenue. So my ideal vision for the commercial zone is exactly that, more businesses along Cedar Hills Drive to the roundabout. I mean, I know it's zoned in a certain way that it allows for such a thing to be built, but in an ideal world, I would love to see more businesses along that sector instead of something residential. That's just my personal opinion.
Thanks, Denise.
Can you stay there for just 1 second?
Yes.
Because I want to add to this while we're on this topic, so we don't have to revisit it again.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, what the city has done is the city approved the project to go in, but with conditions
right. That
would limit the development in certain ways. One of them is reducing the number of units. There's various other conditions that are put on it.
Mm-hmm.
The owner and the developer are currently fighting those conditions. And anytime there's any kind of dispute like that, it will cost the city to maintain its position. And so I wanted to hear from the candidates kind of whether you're committed to
maintaining that position, even if it may cost us some money down the line to stick to our guns.
I personally think it's worth sticking to the guns and spending some money because it's a long-term investment in the city. So you could save money now and get out of the fight and let them do what they want, but down the line, is that going to be what's beneficial for the city? I don't think so. That's something that you need to look at. And if you need to spend money now to make money in the future, then I think that's what the city needs to do.
Thank you. Trent. So it's a two-part question, and you got them both?
I think so.
Okay.
If I miss anything, feel free to let me know and I'll make sure I cover it. I do want to be a little careful in how I answer this, just because I was one of those that made that decision. So I'll try to be a little guarded on that. I do believe that the city has the right to make requirements and guidelines for businesses that can come into our city. I believe the city was very clear on those guidelines, and rightfully so. I think the city should stick by those. I don't think that the city should lower their standards or change their standards because a developer wants to come in and do something differently. We provide a quality of life for our citizens, and I think as council, if we listen to those citizens, and if they say that we want to stick by these guidelines and this is what we want in our city, then I think that carries a lot of weight, and that the city should listen to its residents. So yes, if it does cost money, I think the city should stand behind that and follow its guidelines and follow the code that's been set out for us. Did I cover all of your questions, Jenny?
I think
you got them both.
So, yes.
So. You did.
Okay.
David.
So that commercial land is, of course, owned by a private party, right? So the city doesn't necessarily get to have its wish list. It kind of depends on what arrangement that private party comes to with us with a developer. Now, they happen to have brought forth the developer that wanted to build this community complex there. I don't even know how many hours I've spent on that topic in Planning Commission. Over a two-year period, they came originally, as you well know, they wanted a five-story building. I think the Planning Commission whittled them down to three stories and two stories in part. They proposed probably three or four different variations of the building over that span. A lot of discussion. I'm the only person in the city that's ever voted no on this project in Planning Commission. My fellow commissioners voted for it. I voted no.
Can you remind me why?
So the precise reason why I voted no is because I felt that they had not provided in writing a commitment that it would truly be a 55-plus senior housing project. They only verbally committed to such. They never put it in writing. So that's why I voted no. I just felt there's an apartment complex without that. I know the council voted, I believe, unanimously in favor with the conditions. And, of course, one of the conditions I think that you made, Paula, was overcome that. I think there was an age requirement. If I remember one of the conditions was all members had to be, I think, 55 and older or something. I forget what it was. But so that was, you know, that was mitigated during with one of your conditions. So I support the council and their decision in that regard, because that was one of the, that was my concern with the project, that it truly may not be a 55 plus building. But I will say that, you know, we have permitted uses there, right? And we can have our desires. We just need to get some other developers to work with the owners and get something different. But that's a process that needs to be done.
Thank you.
The second part of it was, you willing to stick by it even if it costs money?
What's that?
By the council.
Well, yeah, I mean, I imagine the discussion's probably been occurring in closed session. I have no idea how much money we're talking about. So it's a little difficult to make a, you know, authoritative decision not knowing how much money we're talking about. But yes, I do think it's worth a battle. But I don't know how much money we're talking about, right? So I'll see about that.
Thank you.
On a personal level, you know, I would have liked to have seen a little more of a commercial base in that area. You know, I know one thing that drew us to this area was the quietness and all that. So there's that aspect that I understand. You know, one thing that we want in the community center, right? We want people to come in and have that sense of community. And there's really not much else going on in the area. And so I typically have to go to Lehigh or down to, you know, Orem or whatnot to take my family. So in that, as a resident, that's my feeling. the, you know, I don't know the numbers. I don't know what, you know, how the impact that would have with the sales tax and or property taxes versus property taxes and whatnot. So there's a lot of information that I would love to, you know, have review to answer this question a little better. And could you remind me your question again as to sticking your guns, but specifically to what just?
Yeah, mainly just this, the council has made a decision. Mm-hmm. It's being litigated or contested in terms of whether the developer believes those conditions were legally imposed or not. Mm-hmm. And so if it comes to appearing before an ombudsman or going to a court, there's legal costs involved to defend decisions. So the question is, would you commit to defending the legal decision, or are you more thinking, man, that's something we should give up on?
Yeah, no. So I've having dealt with other developers, I mean, they're always going to try to do that and twist people's arms and try to get their way. But you are here to answer to the people, you know, and to the interests of the residents. And, you know, of course, like just like was mentioned, I mean, I don't know all the details of what you discussed and whatnot, but I would support the council's decision, you know, because of what I've heard already tonight and what I've heard about you from all of you before. I know that those interests were considered, and so I would support that, and it's better for the long run. We're looking at the long picture, and you know, developers are always going to try to, that's what they do, but you as a city council, you do what you got to do. So
thank you. Any more questions? If not,
I have some more.
Okay, go ahead. Save some for the second round.
Maybe I will
won't ask the same one again. Okay.
So I'd like to hear your opinions on one of the things we discussed at council, in terms of how much is this building, should it be a community building versus a golf clubhouse, and how we, you know, any ideas you might have for making it more of a community building.
So I don't know why it can't be both. I mean, it's a great golf clubhouse. It's a great reception center. It can be a great restaurant. I feel like there's space here to do all kinds of fun things. And the residents in our city are active, fun people. They want to do things. If there are events offered here, they'll come. If you build it, they'll come. And you've built a great building here. This is a really great place for people to come. I've gone to lots of events here. So I feel like there's the potential for this to become what it needs to be. I know a lot of residents thought there was going to be a pool here and thought there were going to be some other things here. And I know in the long term that those things can happen. And that Cedar Hills has a long-term plan. We're a new city as far as cities go. So we can't expect to have everything right now. And I think that turning this events or community center into what it should be is a long-term goal. And everything shouldn't be happening today. It will happen. Just we have to come up with the right plan and bring the right things here so that the citizens want to be here. And so far, maybe they haven't found something that they want to do here, but let's give them what they want to do.
Thank you. Trent?
Yeah, I think we've actually done a really good job over the last couple of years creating a good mix of recreation and the golf. Like Denise said, it is a recreation center, but it is a clubhouse because we do have golf operations that run out of here. I definitely would like to see more recreation, but at the same time, I also think that the wedding events and the whole Bible church and all the other things that we bring in here, the emergency preparedness fair, all of those to me are recreational type activities. Unfortunately, we don't have the resident base to support a lot of the activities that some of the bigger cities do. Unless we double our population, we probably will never get there. So unfortunately, we're kind of stuck here a bit. So I think we do need to have kind of a hybrid and kind of find that balance as to what works best for us. I mean, Cedar Hills is not like any other city pretty much in the state. I mean, we've got our own unique needs and circumstances and group of residents. So we have to look and find out what best suits our recreation needs and what suits our golf needs and all of that. And it has to be on an ongoing basis. Just because we evaluate it this year doesn't mean it's not going to change next year or in 5 years. As far as how to get more recreation and different things here, that's something we struggled with for a while. And I think it's evolved, and I think it's developed, and I think we're headed in the right track. But I don't know that I have anything that I can say, hey, if we do this, they will come. Unfortunately, I don't have a giant field that we can do that with. So, but I think we're headed in the right direction.
Thank you. David Driggs.
This is a dual-purpose building, and I don't know what golf would do with this room, for example. I mean, there's more space here than what golf needs, right? So it's a dual-purpose building. I'm actually glad you asked this question, because I do have an idea.
about how we get some additional people in here. And it goes back to one of my campaign goals. So we have our commercial zone. We want to build it out and increase our sales tax revenue. But I also feel like there's a totally untapped small business community in our city. Probably every other home in our city probably has a small business in it. And so I would like to create a small business forum or mentoring program, classes or workshops, a variety of fronts, whether it's social media, whether it's marketing, whether it's how to do a budget for business, those types of things. Maybe draw in some adults into the building, not just the youth. And maybe use some of these classrooms or this room for that kind of a workshop. So that's an idea that I have.
Thank you. Maurice.
So I agree. I mean, the golf course is here right now, and it is here, and we have to figure out what is needed. I do believe it's a little bit of both, and it should be. You know, I know for one thing, once you guys were discussing Ernie's, I said, hey, I will be here much more often if Ernie's is here. So it seems like there is movement, there's discussion, there's on both sides, and I think that's healthy, and that's what's important. What I've seen with golf developments, it took time. Then I'd say about 80% of them were not successful, but the 20%, the right management, the right discussions, the right little vendor here, the right group here, and word of mouth. I think it's building. I mean, I know with my previous company, I mean, there were a few comments here and there that I threw out, so I'd like to say I think I contributed to my previous employer in having their Christmas parties here. So you know, I know that that's everybody loved it. You know, everybody thought, wow, this is right here. They work in the office is in Alpine, and they didn't know that this facility existed here, so close, really. And so word of mouth and all that, but I think it should be a little bit of both. I mean, it is here, to at least for the time being. I think somebody already indicated that, hey, to remove it, the logistics and the money and all that, I mean, that's just going in the wrong direction. All this would be wasted. And so I don't think that's the topic. If that's something the community wants at some point, then that should be brought up and discussed again and analyzed. But I think right now it's make it work and do whatever's necessary to do so.
Thank you. Daniel, you have any more questions?
Not at the moment.
Okay. All right. Then I'm going to suggest that we go to a first vote. I do want to say a couple of things, which are that I am so impressed with our group of people that are applying for this position. And even though some of them have gone, I would like you to remember and consider the people that have already left tonight or couldn't make it tonight. And so this is an important position. So Ben Ellsworth and Bill Milton have both served the city through the Parks Trails Beautification Committee. And these are wonderful candidates. I'm so impressed. And so whoever we get, I'm going to feel fortunate to be able to work with this person for the next 6 months or so. So this is an open vote. So what I'm going to do is we're going to go down the row, and I need you to give me your choice. And if there's 100% majority, then state law says that is decided, of course. If not, then we're going to a two-person final. So I'm going to start with my left, Mrs. Reese.
So you want me to choose one person? That's what you're asking for?
That's right.
That is hard because we do have such good candidates.
They are really good.
This is a very, very strong field. Thank you guys for coming.
I'm going to say Denise.
Daniel?
I'm going to say Denise as well.
Ben?
I'm going to go with Trent.
Okay. Mike?
Hey, wasn't there a question about hard decisions? Or?
I think I've done this now three times, and I haven't liked it any of the times. It's hard.
You guys are all great, and I have reasons for my vote, but I could take either one of you. I could take either of the two that aren't here as well. They would have been certainly on my in my list, but I'm going to vote for Trent.
Okay. So we have our two finalists, and so David and Maurice, thank you so much for participating in this process. It is very important. So thank you very much. And I hope you still, David, I know you're still going to be involved with the city because you already have an obligation. But Maurice, I would encourage you to also be involved as well. So thank you so much.
Well, and they're all running. They're both running.
And Maurice is too.
This is my
get
to know you all.
Well,
you can.
Thank you.
This is going to be a hard-fought election. You guys are really good candidates.
Okay. All right. So now what we're going to do is we're going to have some more questions for Denise and Trent. And then we're going to have closing statements that are about a minute long. So now we've got more questions. So council members, fire away. And they can be
I'll go first.
Can they be as a group or it can be individual questions?
No, this is for group. One of the questions that we've talked about as a council and in the community as well has been what to do with St. Andrew's Estates. As you guys know, a former council, I think it was more than 10 years ago now, decided to rearrange the course. They spent around, I think, $800,000, dug up that hole and said, hey, we'll sell this. I actually believe the minutes from back then said they thought it would cover the entire golf course debt. So I think somehow they thought they were going to get $5 or $6 million at the height of the market. I don't know how that was realistic. Water under the bridge, it's in economic terms what I would now call a sunk cost. You can't get that back. And so rather than say, oh, we spent that money and therefore we have to go forward with that plan, our council and future councils will have to decide what do we want to do with that space. And I've heard a number of ideas. They kind of split into two camps. There's the camp says we should just go ahead and continue with that former plan. We should develop it with homes. We'll get more realistically $1 or $2 million, and we can use that for some other needs of the city, maybe for building a park elsewhere. And then I've heard a different camp say no, we should keep that as open space, partly just because open space is hard to get. And so if you're thinking long term, the idea is, wow, that's cheap to have spent only $800,000 to get that much land for open space. Other people think, well, we made a commitment when we built the Cedars to put all the density in the homes and the rest was supposed to be open space. And so it feels kind of weird to then kind of come back on that commitment and say, oh, we'll develop it ourselves when the original developer couldn't. And that feels kind of weird. And then other people say, hey, we should use that for a park, maybe a dog park, maybe a sledding hill, maybe a splash pad, maybe a pool. I don't know. There's lots of things you can do with open space and public facilities. So I'd love to hear from the two of you kind of your take on what your vision would be for where that would go. It's a really hard question.
I think Trent should get to go.
And Trent, yeah, because it's reverse order now.
It is. It is reverse alphabetical. So Trent's up first.
I would actually like to see that as open space. I realize that there is a potential to make an X number of dollars on it. Our city is limited by space. We're bound on one side by mountains, which we'll never be able to move. So we are kind of landlocked. We don't have a whole lot of room we can grow or develop or bring into our city. Open space is kind of a premium, and that's one of the things that I really like about our city. For me, being able to make $1.5 million or whatever the money that we would get off that, to me, is not worth the cost of losing the open space in our city. So for me, I would rather see it open space, keep it as part of the golf course, turn it into a dog park, or do something with it and kind of manicure it so that it's kind of the entrance to American Fork Canyon, and it presents well for our city.
Thank you. Denise?
Well, I agree with Trent. I think it doesn't make sense to develop it. It's kind of awkwardly located, and it's below a hole. I feel like golf balls are going to be coming into people's yards all day long. If you live there, it wouldn't be very good. And a dog park's a great idea. I live in Canyon Heights, where we have water retention basin. We call it the Grassy Bowl, filled with dog dew all the time. I would love for there to be a place where someone can take their dogs and let them play and have fun and keep the other green spaces clear for humans. So I do like the idea of green space. We don't have enough. Trent is right. We don't have enough green space. I like the idea of developing parks and keeping spaces green. That's what keeps a community beautiful. It's not just the beautiful homes in the neighborhood. It's having those open spaces that are well maintained. And you come into the city, that's our northern entrance to the city. You come in and you see that beautiful space, and it just gives a really great feeling to the entrance to our city. So yes, I would like to see that maintained by the city as a green space of some sort.
Thank you. anyone else have a question?
I do.
Go ahead.
I got lots of questions.
Oh, boy.
One of the other big, hard questions for the city is whether we should at some point build a splash pad or a pool. And you hopefully have already taken the survey that we put out. We kind of staged three different possibilities. One that's around $10 a month for a smaller pool, up to a larger one that's more like $28 a month, and another one kind of in between.
There is a fourth.
Or doing nothing?
Yes.
Of course. Obviously, that was part of the question. One option is to do nothing and to say, well, I don't like incurring more debt. I think we have enough debt. Don't think we need another pool. Don't think residents will support a pool because there's other pools that are nearby. Perfectly valid arguments on that side of the ledger. And there's other arguments to say, well, our residents would like it. And if we think we can afford it, it's a nice thing to add. As a number of you have mentioned, there's not a whole lot to do in Cedar Hills, and this would enable kids to have a place to go and do something that's really fun and enjoyable. And so I'd love to hear your take on this.
Like you said, I mean, you kind of answered the question for me. We do have a lot of pools around us. I don't think that North Utah County necessarily needs another pool. We've got multiple pools within a 5 to 10 minute drive that are perfectly accessible, and other cities are more than happy to have our residents go use them. Do I like to drive to another city to use their recreational facilities? No, not really. But at the same time, we have a limited population base here. Pools are notoriously expensive. The overhead, the maintenance, the liability, all the things that go into a pool, I just don't see it working for our city. I don't think we have the draw, and I think there's other competing pools in our area that are going to prevent us from making it reasonable and financially sensible. For me, the overhead, the maintenance, and liability, I think is going to get outrageous, especially as it starts to deteriorate and you have to start putting more money into it, things break down, and fences have to be replaced, and pumps have to be replaced, and all the maintenance that goes into it, for me, is just not an attractive option. I would like to see a splash pad or some type of small water facility available for kind of the younger kids. I know there's a couple of them in the area. When I first came on the council, that was actually one of the things that I did, was look into that and see if it was feasible to do some type of a splash pad or something up here. The maintenance and overhead on it are pretty limited. I mean, there is some cost to it, but I think that's much more sensible for our size of city and for our residents, and it wouldn't burden our residents with more $10 to $15, $20, $30 a month.
Would it change the equation at all if multiple cities in the area went in together?
It would change it a little bit, but as you saw with Lone Peak, the best intentions don't always line up and follow through. So as much as we would like to say, yes, all four, five, six, seven cities are going to be in it for the long haul, that's not guaranteed. As we've seen with the golf course, things can change. Our best projections may not be good enough. And so I would still probably not be in favor of a pool. If the majority of residents want it and they want to have a vote and that's what the residents want, then I would support it. But right now, I don't see that happening for our city.
On the splash pad, where would you put it?
That's a really good question, because in order to support a splash pad, you have to have parking facilities, bathroom, water, and all the other things that go with it. I think the cost would be quite excessive to put it kind of in the St. Andrews area, but I am not opposed to that. I think that is part of a recreational and an open space area if the costs work. I haven't researched that. I don't know what it would cost to put it over there. I would like to do it here. However, we do have a problem with parking and sheer number of people here at a recreation center and golf clubhouse area. My next best option would be actually kind of a combined hybrid commercial district with a splash pad in the center of it. I would love to see something down in the commercial area with an integrated splash pad, walking paths, bike paths, exercise loop.
What about Deerfield Park?
Deerfield Park would be another great place to put them. And I'm not opposed to that at all.
Thank you. Denise?
So I actually think that the city would benefit from having a pool. When this community center was built, one of the things that they said was the possibility of being here is an aquatic center, and the residents were very excited about that idea. I know when I had little kids and I had to go to either the AF pool or the PD pool, it was not, you know, I mean, you could get there. It's no big deal. It takes you 10, 15 minutes to get there. But if we had a pool in our area, in our city, and I think the Deerfield Park area would be a great place for a pool, maybe maybe even a small pool splash pad area combination thing. What I'm thinking about, the reason I think it would be beneficial for the city to have a pool and some sort of recreation area like that is because I think it would add value to the city. It makes it attractive to someone coming, moving from somewhere else, looking for somewhere else to live, to say, hey, look, this neighborhood that we want to move in has this, it has this pool, it has, you know, this recreation center, has all these amenities right nearby. I think that's attractive to bring people to Cedar Hills. And I think when you bring people into Cedar Hills, the property values go up because they want to live in an area that has these amenities. And so I think it would just be beneficial for the value of Cedar Hills to put something like that in. I know it costs money. I have a pool at my house myself. I know it's a maintenance nightmare. I know it's kind of a money pit, but at the same time, it adds value. So that's my opinion on the pool.
Thanks, Denise. Anyone else have a question?
I do. So if you're going to serve on the council, there are going to be times when you do not agree with other members of the council. Sometimes quite strongly, probably many times quite strongly. And at times that those disagreements have become very public and ugly. So how would you deal with disagreements and conflict amongst the council?
I've been there. I've done that, unfortunately. They're not always fun, and I've had a lot of discussions with all of you, and I've disagreed with every one of you sitting at that table, sometimes more vehemently than others, but I think that's part of the job. As much as we don't like it, and I would love to say everything's just happy-go-lucky, it doesn't happen. That's the good thing about city councils. I mean, we have six of us for a very specific reason, is so that we can give broader points of view, and we can have multiple perspectives on things so that we can each go out and reach out to different parts of residents and be able to form a broader opinion. So I think a lot of it goes back to that it's just being professional, being able to handle ourselves efficiently and effectively, and making sure that we can resolve the differences. Even though I've had disagreements with every one of you, I will still say hi to each one of you whenever I see you in public. I will still talk to you, and I'm always open to have conversations with anybody.
Thank you. Denise.
That's hard. I don't like conflict, but I'm not afraid to fight for what I believe in. So, you know, if it became public and people were critical of me, I would certainly take it and listen to what they have and explain my viewpoint. So I don't think you should back down from what you believe in just because you think you're going to be criticized by somebody. So, and I think that a council can work well together. If everybody agreed on the council all the time, what's the point of having a council? You have to have differing opinions. You have to feel strongly about something or you shouldn't be doing what you're doing. So I think you come to the table with your own personality, your own opinions, and then you work within that. So I think that having differing opinions is good for a council. It's healthy. It's productive. And if it becomes public, then you just deal with whatever comes.
It will become public.
When it becomes public, yeah, you deal with what comes.
Thank you. Questions more? Does anyone else have a question?
I just have one more. And maybe this pertains a little bit more to Denise, but Trent as well. What are your goals and views for the city over the next 5 years?
Trent. We're still going reverse alphabetical.
Just making sure.
Which is the best ordering of all time.
My goals and vision for the future for Cedar Hills, really commercial development, is a big one for us. One of the things I hate doing is driving down to American Fork or Provo to go to dinner and to take my kids out. So I would love to see more commercial development, and that's one of the things I actually ran on 6 years ago, was being able to help that commercial development be able to grow our commercial side. Recreation is another big one. I would love to see some more recreation programs for kind of the younger kids and be able to get YCC and some of those other things involved. And so I think kind of the big things for me right now would be commercial and recreation.
Thank you. Denise.
So I agree with Trent. I think commercial is my number one hope for the city, that our commercial zone will grow. And I being female and liking things to be beautiful, I love the direction that Cedar Hills is going as far as our beautification. The roundabout's beautiful area. I want to see the city continue to beautify the areas that it has control over. I know we don't have much control over Canyon Road right now. There's not much we can do, but there are areas of the city that we can do something about. And I would love to see the city become a really attractive place for people to come and live. That people, I've recruited people to live in Cedar Hills. My parents live here now. My brother lived here. My sister lived here. I tell everybody, this is a great place to live. And I want everybody in the city to feel that way. I want people to be proud of Cedar Hills and to feel safe in Cedar Hills and to love what's going on here. So yes, commercial is important. Yes, city beautification is important. Just the general development of the city is important to me.
Thank you. Does anyone else have a question? If not, then I will move to closing statements. And they're a minute or so. And so this round is also reverse alphabetical because we were all the way through alphabetical first in the beginning. So Trent, you've got the first closing statement. Denise, you have the last closing statement. And then we'll vote again. So Trent, time's yours.
Well, as I've said many a times, I just wanted to say thanks to the council and mayor. I've been on that side of the table. A lot of times it's a thankless job. I mean, I know you guys put in a ton of hours for very little things. So just thank you for all you guys do. As far as everything that I've said, you guys know me, so I won't try to reiterate everything that I've said. But I do think Cedar Hills is a great place. I wouldn't be here, standing here tonight, if I didn't think it was, and if I didn't want to continue to help the city. I really don't have a lot to add to it. I've answered the questions effectively, and I think that I can be able to help out in the next 6 months. That's it.
Thank you. Denise.
So, yes, thank you, too, for listening to me. It's been a long night, and I appreciate your patience. You know, I've lived here from the time when most of the people who lived in Cedar Hills just lived along Cedar Hills Drive. That was it. I knew almost everybody in town to now where I don't. But I have a vision and a belief in Cedar Hills that it's going to continue to grow and be a beautiful place, and I want to be a part of that. I know I'm a new face to you, to some of you, but I think that's important to bring fresh faces and fresh perspectives onto the city council. And I want an opportunity to bring my love for Cedar Hills onto the council and to see what I can do to help this city progress and become what I know it can be.
Thank you, Denise. Okay. We're going to vote again. And this is an open vote as well. So I started from my left last time. I'm going to start from my right this time. So, Mike, you're first.
So let me just explain my vote just a little bit. I support all your positions. I think they're in line with how I think, and I love the community too. And Maurice, David, and Bill Knowlton and Bill, that were not here.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, I think they'd all fill the role perfectly. My thought is, Denise is between you and Trent, so it's that's all it is, right? So I got to make this decision, which is really hard. Because I could go with Denise. I don't know her, but I like her positions, and I've talked to her before. But my point is, all you guys are running for office. Trent isn't. Trent's had some experience. That's where my vote is going to stay with Trent.
Okay. Ben.
I'd like to echo with Mike here. What I don't want to do, I was really impressed with Maurice. I know David, known David for a few years, really impressed. I've recently met Denise. I know Ben Ellsworth a little bit, and I think the four of you guys are going to be, I can't wait to watch and see how the campaign goes. What I don't want to do is I don't want to give a perception out there that I support one of you over the other four, because, or not the other four, the other three, because I think all of you guys are top notch, and I want to, I mean, it was a hard decision. So I'm going to go with someone who's not running in the fall. just so that everybody, when you guys start campaigning, you're all on the same level. I'm going to go with Trent.
Okay. Daniel?
You guys are both really good candidates. Out of all the questions we asked you, I think you only differed on one question. And I actually liked what both of you had to say. I'm right in the middle on the issue of the pool, and so I can't say I agree with one of you more than the other on that.
You said you kind of want to say I didn't want to give
an edge. In the past, every time we've had an appointment, we've always wanted somebody who had a commitment to then running for re-election and serving. This is a little bit different because you're not really running for re-election. The election's almost happening concurrently with the appointment. So I totally get what Ben is saying about not wanting to prejudice one candidate over the other for the general election. On the other hand, I really like what Denise had to say. I like the idea of bringing in fresh faces and fresh perspective. I think that's really healthy for a council. Trent, I totally agree with you that no hard feelings ever, anytime we've ever disagreed. I'm going to give my vote to Denise tonight, see where it goes.
Jenny.
I agree. It's harder when you get all these candidates that have very similar views and desires for the community. And so thank you both for being here. I'm not quite as worried as Ben as far as giving the perception, because in my experience in living in Cedar Hills over the past 9 years, the council members, whether it's this council or previous councils, have always been very active and engaged in telling people who they support. So that's not a strange thing for the council to give feedback onto support when it comes to elections. And so I agree with Daniel. I like the idea of maybe having a different perspective, and so my vote would be also for Denise.
So you're voting for Denise?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's 2-2.
That is a tie, ladies and gentlemen. Mayor breaks the tie.
You get the vote.
I do. And so I am, again, really impressed with you guys. And Trent, no hard feelings. And so the past is the past. I think you acquitted yourself really, really well tonight. And Denise, I've run in your donut run. And so that's, unfortunately, that's the extent of my knowledge of you. But I'm going to vote for you. And so my vote's for Denise. So that means that, Denise, you are the new council member. And there's a process now to swear you in, and that will be done by Ms. Mulvey.
Can I lead a round of applause for all the candidates?
You guys absolutely. And after you've been sworn in, then there's an assignment that I'm giving you. Okay? So, Ms. Mulvey?
Okay. If you want to come up here and raise your right hand and repeat, I state your name. I, Denise Anderson, do solemnly swear that I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States. I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of this state.
The Constitution of this state.
And the laws and the ordinances of the City of Cedar Hills.
And the laws and ordinances of the City of Cedar Hills.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
Thank you. I just need your signature here. And then here is the council binder for the rest of the meeting. I think all we have left is item 16.
There's one action item.
Oh, you're right. Okay.
And then there is a discussion. So join us at the table. What's that?
We have a seat.
We do have a seat. Okay. So
congratulations.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
You're awesome, David.
Yeah. All right. So. Mr. Crawley had a position on the Planning Commission, Denise, and I'd like to extend that that assignment to you as well, which means that you are the liaison between the Planning Commission and the Council. You don't vote for there, and all you do is report back to the Council in terms of what transpired there. And if they ever have questions, it's okay to answer them, but you aren't a voting member there. So I need a motion to approve Denise Anderson to have an assignment to the Planning Commission.
I move that we approve resolution number 6-20-2017D, a resolution assigning members of the City Council, staff, and residents of the City of Cedar Hills, Utah, to certain boards, committees, and entities, specifying appointing Denise Anderson to be the liaison to the Planning Commission.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Geddes seconds it. Any
got
further?
It. I got it, finally.
Good. It's been a competition all night, so it's been seconded. Is there any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Starting with Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Anderson, you can't vote for yourself, so we'll leave that. So it was unanimous for those voting. Thank you very much. We're going to move on to our last item, which is a discussion on Canyon Road Sewer. So, Mr. Goodwin, go ahead.
I know this is the real reason everyone's still here. So, in January, as part of that retreat, we talked about the Canyon Road Sewer project. It's been on the Capital Projects Fund plan for a number of years. It's got a placeholder amount of $400,000 for it, and the scope of that project was, if you're familiar with Canyon Road, it's from Box Elder Drive, which is where that church is, south of the city building, north, heading north on Canyon Road, all the way to Mountaintop Trails. That was the scope of the project then. The project, as it was being proposed, included providing that sewer service to a number of Pleasant Grove residents, in the hopes that, because these homes are currently on septic systems. Now, the hope was that when the septic systems fail, as we're seeing an increasing number of septic systems in that area fail, as they are reaching that age when they start to go down, that they would come to the city and boundary adjust into Cedar Hills, which, as you're aware, those of you that have been on the council, it's never an easy prospect to get a property to boundary adjust from Pleasant Grove into Cedar Hills. It's fairly involved. So Jeff Mogg and I went down and met with Scott Darrington, who is the city administrator for Pleasant Grove, as well as their engineer, Marty Beaumont, and discussed and tried to get a feel for where their city was on working with us on this line, or, you know, how open do you think your council would be to letting these people boundary adjust in the event that they need to hook up to sewer. Now, there's a time sensitivity to, that's a part of this, in that the county is currently designing Canyon Road. If you drive up and down Canyon Road, you'll see trucks with PEC on the side. That's the engineering firm that is designing Canyon Road right now. And this plan has to be incorporated as part of their plans. If it's not, there will be a 5-year moratorium on making any cuts into the road. So if a septic system were to fail, or one of the Cedar Hills septic systems were to fail in the meantime, we would have an issue if there's not a sewer line in the road. Now, it is fairly expensive, and I understand that. So based on our discussions with Pleasant Grove and internally with staff, we are recommending that we scale back the project from the original $400,000, incorporating all of Pleasant Grove from Mountaintop Trails to Box Elder Drive, and limiting it to, you have 360 feet here, right?
An additional 360 feet.
So it's from Box Elder Drive north, 360 feet?
Because
it looks like it might be about 500 feet.
About
600 feet? I was way off. This 680 feet will service 7 Cedar Hills residents and only 1 Pleasant Grove residents who happens to be in the middle of them. It's not that we're trying to reach them. They just happen to be right there. Now, we do need to get some direction on where this is going. This is only a discussion tonight.
Is there more before I ask questions?
I was just going to go over the costs briefly.
Okay, so from Mountaintop Trails, their sewer comes down the hill, and does it go down Canyon Road a little ways before? Oh.
That's not mountaintop trails. That is.
You can see the jurisdiction. I'm sorry, that's not a very good picture, but it's. You can see it's the.
So it's Box Elder. It's Box Elder North.
The purple lines are the laterals for Cedar Hills resident, and there's one other lateral that is the Pleasant Grove resident.
Trying to, this doesn't quite show mountaintop trails.
No, it doesn't go north far enough to show mountaintop trails.
So,
Jeff, where does the sewer flow from mountaintop trails?
It goes past the fire station.
Cedar Hills Drive.
Oh, goes. So it goes north a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh. So what you're doing is cutting it off a little bit and not going quite to that
point. Yeah, we wouldn't go to that point, but all of those flows wouldn't go into that system. They would go down Jens Monson. And 4,000.
Right, because there's a sewer on Jens, right?
Yeah, so they'd be gravity fed south.
Okay. So what will happen to the rest of the homes?
The rest of
there's not sewer on Jens Monson?
Well, that's homes there are between where we're going to stop and where
we're. Well, that's the good question, because based on our Pleasant Grove discussions, we feel like it might be for Pleasant Grove to decide. What we're proposing then is, do we spend $400,000 to provide a sewer line the entire length? Because we do have to get back to the county on the scope of the design. So I think there's three options, the way I'm looking at it. There's three options that the council has. You either provide it from Box Elder to Mountaintop Trails, which is the entirety of that road, incorporating non-residents. There is from Box Elder north the 680 feet to incorporate the 7 Cedar Hills residents as 1 Pleasant Grove resident. And then there's the option of we're not going to do this, period.
And then what happens if the septic
fails?
That's the question.
If the septic if one of their septic systems fail in that 5-year moratorium,
we'd have to grandfather it in or something. Or
we would be responsible to help them find something.
Yeah.
We would have to help them pressure the county to let them install a septic tank again.
That and the county's really great to work with.
Yeah. They've been a fantastic partner.
So there's that. And state law requires that if they're within a certain amount of distance from a sewer line, that they have within 300 feet.
Yeah.
300 feet, they have to attach to, they have to connect to that sewer line. Also, if the city does put in the sewer line, the city can go to those residents and say, you have to connect to those sewer lines before your septic system fails. You have to connect. The city can require that.
And we've had this budgeted in our capital projects fund for
it's been a number
a
of
decade,
years.
I
want to say it's been here longer than I have.
Are there any funds from UDOT and any of that for this? No. Okay.
No. Now, the other question is it's going to cost
to serve 7 people.
The county's engineers are giving us an estimate of $21,000 to design the road. Not design the road, to
design the
line.
Sewer system?
Yeah. Bowen and Collins has given us, and they're a contract engineer firm, they've given us an estimate of $40,000, which includes the design work, the on-site inspections, as well as addressing the drainage on 9220, the duck pond.
And the county doesn't have any of that.
No, right now the county doesn't have a plan for that. Now, Jeff and I have discussed, and we feel like there might be cheaper options to, is that right, Jeff? To design a solution to the 9220 issue?
Yeah, we can look at some other alternatives once we know what the county's road line is.
Yeah. And the other news that we want you to be aware of is that the county is only planning a mill overlay north of Murdoch Canal.
Mm-hmm.
We've tried.
That's all they're going to do for us, right?
That's all.
Yeah.
It won't be a full mill. If they're just going to mill 4 inches.
Yeah.
That's
so,
Chairman,
so we're looking at $400,000 for 7 residents.
No. That the $400,000 was for the entirety of the project. There, I think. How many residents would that include?
That would be. So
how many homes, not necessarily residents, with 400,000 square, please?
A couple of items, and as you look at that map, you'll see that the Jens Monson portion, it actually tees from Jens Monson when you hit Canyon Road, it moves a little bit south and to the north. Everything to the north is Pleasant Grove residents. So this, if we did the entire scope of the project as it is currently designed, it would connect 10 Cedar Hills residents and 7 Pleasant Grove residents.
And what's the cost of that?
That's the $400,000.
That was an estimate from years ago.
So it's probably a little bit more now. Yeah. So now it's $200,000 for 7 residents.
We don't have a bid on that.
We have no numbers on that.
But
you're estimating about that.
These are rough estimates.
But in those days, the 400 included the we couldn't. The county had their policy, or UDOT had their policy. You could. It had to be flowable fill.
Correct.
Yeah. So we're out of that requirement now.
So the proposal to change the scope or reduce the scope of the project puts it into three sections. You would have the south section of about 750 feet. You'd have the north section, which would be all Pleasant Grove residents of approximately 750 feet. And you'd still have the Jens Monson section that would be 750 feet. That could be done at a different time because there won't be any moratorium on Canyon Road, but that could come up at any time that they need to make a connection, and then we would need to accommodate them because most of them are within 300 feet of a sewer line when you go over 4,000.
So my other question is, we could go out to bid. I know Bone and Collins is our contractor, but we could go out for bid on design. The scope and design if we felt like that wasn't in the realm of things.
And that's why I say the county has given us a design a cost estimate for the design of $21,000 for the full entirety of the project.
So my other question is, in that study period, could we consider keeping we'd like a sewer in the middle, close to the middle of a road, but is it possible that we can be on a shoulder, and if we had to, is it possible that that sewer line could be out of the mill and overlay if they're only going to mill and overlay what's there? There's a fair amount of shoulder on the west side, as I know that.
My initial reaction to that is you may have to modify some drive approaches, which could be very expensive for the city.
It would be difficult. There is a high pressure Questar gas line.
Yeah, it runs on the east side of the road.
I know that one.
So we need to be out in the road a short distance to get the distance away from that gas line.
So would this address the sewer needs for all of our residents in that area that are currently on septic, or would there still be some on septic that wouldn't be addressed by this line?
It would not address the three residents that are on Jens Monson, but it would address all of our residents that are on Canyon Road, facing Canyon Road.
The important point there is that there's not going to be a moratorium on Jens Monson.
Oh, of course.
So there's not as much of a time critical need to address it in the next month and a half.
So,
and it's Jens.
So what's
depending on the part of the cedar?
Yeah. So what's the if we ought not to do this? What's the negative effect of?
Well, if we don't do it, we are, in my mind, we're rolling the dice on if their septic tank fails in that 5-year moratorium. County doesn't allow cuts, and the county's also not going to approve new septic systems. So you're in a bit of a catch-22.
Well, they would be in a bit of a catch-22 because there'd be huge pressure on them.
My guess is that it's a mill overlay, and it's going to look similar to how it looks right now. So,
So the question I have is actually a little bit of a subtle one. This area that we're proposing not to cover, that's the northern area, that's the PG residents, what happens if one of them decides to boundary adjust in the Cedar Hills?
Depending on which one, because it does depend, it could create an island, which would force a number of residents in Pleasant Grove to boundary adjust up to Wedgwood.
Yeah, and I'm talking more about implications for sewer coverage. So if they decide to boundary adjust in, but we don't have a sewer line there because we decided tonight maybe to not go in that direction.
So are you assuming that their septic has failed at this point? Because they can still have
maybe they boundary adjust in and we say that's great, but then their septic tank fails.
Okay. That's
then it does become ours.
That's the question.
Yeah.
So by making a decision, we might be saying, hey, we don't want those people to boundary adjust in.
Now let me clarify something, is that the original project was to try to draw people in to try to clean up that boundary because it is a mess on Canyon Road.
Mm-hmm.
If the council's okay with providing that service with the expectation that they don't boundary adjust in, that's a different discussion.
I'm actually perfectly fine with that.
So the issue there is that the city would be spending the money up front for the capital project, and there's no way we recoup the money on this.
Be fair, those residents, from what we're told, have been very, very explicit that they have no desire to ever boundary adjust into Cedar Hills.
The phrase is over my dead body.
That's very explicit.
Well, and that's my thing is if we're going to do this, maybe we go out to those residents and say, look, we're looking at doing something like this. Would you be willing to bounty address and you know, to help offset the cost, which their costs are going to be minimal. I mean, we're going to be paying, the residents are going to be paying just as much as
the other thing is, can we, along with those that thought, is can you charge an additional hookup fee?
You can. I don't believe you can do that, but you can establish a special improvement district,
yeah.
Where you basically, it's a tax levy against those homes that benefit from it. And they pay an annual assessment.
Which is the fair way to do it, because it's got a life.
It is a fair way to do it. The city's done it before in North Meadows. And that was 80s. Do you remember when that was? It was a long time ago.
I mean, it's fair. Sewers have a life. I mean, if they pay for it over 20 years, that's fair. If they sell their house, the next person's still paying for it. That person didn't pay 100% for it.
Well, that assessment just transfers.
Right, that's what I mean. It's a tax.
So let's do this. This is not an action item. It's only a discussion. I think it's been a good discussion. We need to bring this back as an action item. And my only thought is, council think long term. I think I can list a number of decisions our city made that they made because they thought they were going to upset someone. And so when you're thinking about doing this, think about the long-term vision of our city as opposed to the next year. So anyways, any other comments on this?
Just one.
Go ahead.
I know that this Canyon Road project has been discussed for a couple of years, a year and a half. And currently it is moving at an incredible pace. They anticipate having this out to bid within 4 weeks, with work starting in August for the utility portion of the project. And so, because I brought this up last week, what happens if Cedar Hills decides we would just want to put this in ourselves? They're like, well, that's not really a problem as long as you're done before August, because we're going to be in that area working and we're not going to have both crews working at the same time. And we have that option as a city that we don't have to put the sewer line in on with the county, but at this point we don't have enough time to get it designed and bid and installed, so we're kind of tied that way too. Just so everybody understands, they are moving at a very quick pace. Bowen and Collins has agreed that they will review the county line items for us, even if they're not doing the design work. They do just our hourly rate that we're contracted with them to do that.
So, Jeff, did you just say that there is not time for us to design and get this ready by August when they're going to be working on there?
Design and do it ourselves.
Yes. However, they can get it designed and they can do it during their construction period. What they don't want is two different crews in there.
Got it.
Working in the same space.
So it can be done, but we just can't do it ourselves.
Yes. All right. So we just need to let them know in the next couple of weeks, what's the scope of the project, or are we even going to have a project?
I understand.
So will this be a review action on our next agenda?
I think if we wait longer than we're out of the game.
So we need to be prepared to make a vote at the next
meeting. Here's the issue. It's already in the capital projects being budgeted for. So we're just trying to look for a little direction. We spent $40,000 with Bowen and Collins and kind of expand their work, including to 9220 drain. Or do we just go with the $21,000 that the county actually designs the sewer line? Or do we just say, you know what, this isn't something we're interested in? The $21,000 includes the design of the entirety of the pipe. So if that's something that the city wants to do, it will be designed from Box Elder to Mountaintop Trails.
So I'm definitely in favor of doing something for Cedar Hills residents. I'd take your recommendation for what's the right, best, cost-effective way to design that. As far as serving the other residents, the Pleasant Grove residents, I would say, let's go knock on doors this week and say, this is your last chance. Are you still dead set against coming into Cedar Hills, or do you want this kind of sewer service and boundary adjust in and help pay for it? And see what they say.
Is that something we should be doing, or Pleasant Grove should be doing?
On that note, as Chandler mentioned earlier, we did have discussions with Pleasant Grove, and they're not in favor of granting a boundary adjustment at this time?
It's not really up to the, I mean, it should be up to the residents, though.
Right.
I mean, that's the position I've always had, is that if there's a Cedar Hills resident that wants to boundary adjust out and it doesn't disrupt the vision of the city, we should allow that to happen.
And their concern,
and we have.
Their concern was is if one of the residents on Canyon Road says, oh, yeah, I want sewer and I'll boundary adjust, then that takes all of the residents clear over onto...
But that's the resident's choice.
It should have happened a long time ago, because that whole thing that comes all the way up Cedar Hills Drive is really weird. This has been a contention for a long time.
And I agree, it's the resident's choice, but as we know, Pleasant Grove can say no. And the resident's next option is to sue the city, which can be a long and expensive process for them.
Well, but there's precedent set here, which is that Gina Day and her friends boundary adjusted over by the fire station, and Cedar and Pleasant Grove didn't want to let them, but their hand was forced. The same thing will happen here. It's up to those residents to tell Pleasant Grove and Cedar Hills what they want to do, and neither is the city should stand in the way.
Then I guess I'm in favor of asking, just because it's their home, it's their property,
and it's what they
deserve a right to know what's going on.
That's right,
and they should have a chance to weigh in. Now, we're not necessarily going to say, oh, okay, you want in, okay, fine, we'll provide it. We should at least hear their opinion.
Yeah. So I agree with that, Chandler. Sorry, Mayor, one thing. So what's Pleasant Grove's plan? If they're not going to put in a sewer, what's their plan? Because they're going to be under the same moratorium as Cedar Hills. What's their plan on their residents, which they have quite a few residents along that stretch? If their septic system fell... What is their plan?
I honestly don't think that they have a plan. I think it's status quo.
Because we would be in the same boat, whether it's their resident or our resident.
We would.
We're in the same boat.
There's a lot of services that Pleasant Grove doesn't provide to their residents north of Murdoch Canal, pressurized irrigation being one of them. You know, not most of those homes have been on septic systems. And, you know, in the case of Gina Day, Mayor's right that the city was able to provide that service because we had a line in the road.
Yeah.
And it kind of forced Pleasant Grove's hand, but there were some. It did take a while. I want to say it took about a year and a half to get that one.
It went.
One thing the mayor said is to look long term, and I completely agree with that. These residents aren't going to be. These Pleasant Grove homes are going to be purchased by. I mean, in 100 years, none of us will be here. Who knows who will be there? They may want to come into Cedar Hill. So I completely support that. And maybe that wasn't what you were alluding to.
No,
but
it cleans up. Cleans up the boundaries.
But it may not be in our lifetime or while we're here. But it gives people down the road an option, and I like that option.
I would agree with that. But I will say on the one issue where we tried to come to an agreement with Pleasant Grove on sewer. And we said, basically, boundary adjust, or when you sell or move, boundary adjust. I mean, we came back with several proposals, which they rejected every one of them. And eventually, they just ripped up the road and installed the sewer themselves. And so we have parallel sewer lines
that
going
is,
down that road.
She's got a point as well.
And so I would imagine PG would probably decide to do that again over losing all those residents. Just based on the interactions I've had with their city manager and their current council. That could change with the new council, but so far they've been pretty...
They've held tight.
Yeah.
And I think I see another number of years before that those mentalities change. However, that sewer line is going to be there 30 to 50 years. So it is a long-term sewer.
So I know we've given you some direction on things to...
I'm more inclined to say, this is my personal opinion, Jeff may differ from this, I'm more inclined to tell the county, spend $21,000, design the entirety of the line, and then we come back and visit.
Right, I'm in favor with that. I mean, planning's cheap.
I mean, it's $21,000. Is it 21?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Am I saying it right? $21,000.
Get a master plan.
It's kind of a lot to design sewer line, but it does give us that long-term option. And that's just, like I said, this is my personal opinion. Jeff,
yeah, that's
different
good.
Than I
do you
do
agree with that, Jeff?
By taking that action, it would eliminate the ability to do the reduction in the scope of the project. We'd be committing to the full portion of this project. We could cut out two of the Cedar Hills residents. That would eliminate coverage to two of the Cedar Hills residents by going that direction.
Wait, so are we committing to the project? we're just
committing to
I thought we were designing it, and then they give us engineer estimates, and then we can.
And then we could decide what we want to fund, right? Yes, I mean, you could stop it at a certain manhole and say, hey, we don't want it beyond this. Yeah.
So tonight we was discussing the option of a reduced scope of the project. But by having them design the project, complete the design, we have the preliminary design here, that would eliminate our ability to do a reduced scope of project.
Why don't we give them the authorization to design the reduced scope that we are proposing? And
then that would not include all of the north end with Pleasant Grove residents.
Which only affected two, I think, right?
It would be seven of the Pleasant Grove connections would be eliminated. So, yeah, I mean, there's some options there, but can't really say, well, finish designing this and then come back and say, well, really, we just want to extend it up from the south end to pick up the Cedar Hills residents because it's too complete. Different designs.
Are you saying that if we go all the way up to Mountaintop Circle that we tie into the sewer a different way?
Yes, there's a break there that, and that's where I was explaining the T that goes down Jens Monson's
or whatever.
Jens Monson's.
And that's where it picks up all the north. The south end only picks up 5 Cedar Hills residents. So the reduction of the scope of the project would extend the south up and pick up 2 more of the Cedar Hills residents.
So it's really a very different project.
It is, because it raises the elevation. The reduction in scope portion raises the depth of the sewer to the point where you can't connect any more going north.
I see.
So then you'd have a new project of bringing it all from Mountaintop, south of Mountaintop down Jens Monson to pick up all those residents. So it would be 2 different projects. And we would anticipate a reduction of the cost of the design work. And I talked to them about that last week, that we would be requesting a review and a reduction of the cost for the design work if we did the reduced scope project and just provide it to Cedar Hills residents.
So staff needing this to come back on agenda for the council to act?
We just kind of wanted to get our direction from you on how to direct the county. It's not really a review action. We're just kind of going to get a sense for where you are because it is budgeted for.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the council solidified under one recommendation. I like what you had to say. And I like retaining the long-term option on this. But if the county designing it for $21,000 allows us to keep the long-term option, that may be a good solution. So,
well, I'll tell except you if it commits us to spending $400,000, that's kind of a waste.
Yeah.
My preference would be to go with the less expensive option and focus on our residents, because I don't see Pleasant Grove, those residents boundary adjusting into Cedar Hills in the next 5 years. And after 5 years is over, if that ever happened, then we could cut into the road and add at that point if we needed to. So I would prefer to do this as cost effectively as possible to service our residents that we know use it. But I would also like to maybe understand from Mr. Shaw what, if there is any, what legal obligations we do have if one of our residents, if their septic system fails, are we under a legal obligation to get them access?
So for example, what if we extended up to 680 feet and the very first home that's in PG that we're not servicing, their septic tank fails and we're within the 300 feet, are we obligated to now somehow connect them up even though...
I believe that homeowner is obligated.
And our system isn't designed to have them because of the slopes and all that?
We're not if they're in a different jurisdiction.
Okay.
But we are obligated because of our sewer management plan, which we all you voted on, that we accepted that, presented it to the state, that we will provide sanitary service to all residents of the city as needed. And the citizens are required to connect if they're within the 300.
Okay, so that's only for our residents, not for PG.
It doesn't answer Pleasant Grove. Yeah. So, I don't believe that we're required to.
But if we decided
5 years from now to connect up these Pleasant Grove residents, and they decided we're going to join a special district so that we can actually pay for it, we could do that at that time. I don't see why we would put in a sewer line and us pay for it to hook up a bunch of PG residents.
I agree with Councilmember Burris. I don't see sentiment changing in the next 5 years. Like we talk a long term, but I mean that there's a long term option there. And 5 years, I don't see too much opinion changing. It's one council term.
One issue they brought up a number of times was that if there was one resident in Pleasant Grove who wanted to connect to the sewer, that creates the island, and that takes all the way into Westwood.
That's why they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
So did they have any sewer installed from that point into Wedgwood?
Wedgwood, they have a sewer line that runs into our sewer and then goes through our outfall.
Do they have any like of their own infrastructure in that whole little peninsula?
No, nope. I don't believe they do.
They don't. So there's stops down below.
They were supposed to come up with a solution to this 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It was, I think it was 17 years ago, but nonetheless, I don't believe that they have any plans to put in any infrastructure.
Where did they put it in recently?
In 4,000
North. Up to what point?
Up to Canyon Road.
Up to Canyon Road.
So up from Canyon Road, west.
It's just a parallel line to ours.
It's just 20 feet deep in the ground.
And that does give them the option now that they can run the sewer up Canyon Road to the residents that we're discussing.
They could build a parallel line.
But there's already a line there from Box Elder to that line, correct? Because that's... That whole line takes Box Elder and down 4,000 or Sven Monson.
Yeah.
Doesn't all the sewer outfall out of Box Elder? Box Elder at the LDS church there.
It all goes south, straight south.
Oh, I thought it turns down and goes to our sewer on Sven Monson.
No.
I thought they had put in a line on 4,000 West.
They did.
They did.
And how far? 9600 North.
It's four names. The street has four names.
Yeah, that's why it's so confusing to me. I'm looking at a map, and I don't even see Sven Monson on here.
Got a county address.
But it doesn't go all the way up to Cedar Hills Drive.
On 4,000 West, they stopped at about the four-way stop there where 4,000 West meets 4,000 North. They didn't extend on. That's why Gina Day and her neighbors connected to our line, because Pleasant Grove had no plans to extend it up to Cedar Hills Drive.
You mean to stop at Harvey Boulevard?
Yes, it stops at Harvey, and then it goes up. It does not extend further.
Okay. Okay, I think that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I'll take a motion to adjourn.
So the direction is that we're going to design for the smaller project?
We're
going to
direct the county to design for the smaller. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's right.
Yeah. I move that we adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much.
Congratulations, and welcome. I do like